All right. Thank you. Good morning. The November 21st, 2024 public meeting of the California Air Resources Board will come to order. Board Clerk, will you please call the roll?
Yes. Dr. Balmes.
Here.
Mr. De La Torre.
Here.
Mr. Eisenhut. Senator Flores.
Flores here.
Assemblymember Garcia. Mr. Guerra.
Guerra here.
Ms. Hurt.
Hurt present.
Mr. Krakow.
Here.
Dr. Pacheco Werner.
Here.
Supervisor Perez. Mr. Rechtschaffen.
Here.
Dr. Shaheen.
Here.
Senator Stern. Ms. Takvorian.
Takvorian here.
Supervisor Vargas. Chair Randolph.
Here.
Madam Chair, we have a quorum.
All right. Okay, we will begin with our housekeeping items. We are conducting today's meeting in person, as well as offering remote options for public participation both by phone and in Zoom. Anyone who wishes to testify in person should fill out a request to speak card available in the foyer outside the boardroom. Please turn it into a board assistant prior to the commencement of the item. If you are participating remotely, you will raise your hand in Zoom or dial *9 if calling in by phone. The clerk will provide further details regarding how public participation will work in just a moment. For safety reasons, please note the emergency exit to the rear of the room through the foyer. In the event of a fire alarm, we are required to evacuate this room immediately and go down the stairs to the lobby and out of the building. When the all clear signal is given, we will return to the auditorium and resume the hearing. A closed captioning feature is available for those of you joining us in the Zoom environment. In order to turn on subtitles, please look for a button labeled CC at the bottom of the Zoom window, as shown in the example on the screen now. I would like to take this opportunity to remind everyone to speak clearly and from a quiet location, whether you are joining us in Zoom or calling in by phone. Interpretation services will be provided today in Spanish for both in-person and Zoom attendees. If you are joining us using Zoom, there is a button labeled Interpretation on the Zoom screen. Click on that interpretation button and select Spanish to hear the meeting in Spanish. If you are joining us here in person and would like to listen to the meeting in Spanish, please speak to a board assistant and they will provide you with further instructions. I want to remind all of our commenters to speak slowly and pause intermittently to allow the interpreters the opportunity to accurately interpret your comments.
Thank you. There we go. Thank you. Muy buenos días. Estoy ofreciendo servicio de interpretación simultánea al español, tanto para quienes nos acompañan presencialmente en la sala y vía Zoom. Si nos acompaña vía Zoom, en la barra de controles aparecerá un icono de interpretación. Simplemente le da clic a ese icono, y selecciona español para escuchar la reunión en su idioma. Ahora, si nos acompaña presencialmente en la sala y desea escuchar la sesión en español, por favor acérquese con uno o una de las asistentes de esta junta y le darán instrucciones adicionales. Recordamos a todas las personas que hagan comentarios hablar en un ritmo pausado para dar oportunidad a él o la intérprete para interpretar sus comentarios de manera precisa. Gracias and thank you.
Thank you. I will now ask the board clerk to provide more details regarding public participation.
Thank you, Chair Randolph. Good morning, everyone. I will provide additional information on the public participation for today's meeting. We will first call in-person commenters who have turned in a request to speak card, and then call commenters who are joining us remotely. If you are joining us remotely and wish to make a verbal comment on one of today, well, on the only item today's board meeting, or during the open comment period at the end of today's meeting, you must be using Zoom webinar or calling in by phone. If you are watching the webcast on CalSpan but you wish to comment remotely, please register for the Zoom webinar or call in. Information for both can be found on the public agenda for today's meeting. To make a verbal comment, we will be using the raise hand feature in Zoom. If you wish to speak on a board item, please virtually raise your hand as soon as the item has begun to let us know you wish to speak. If you are using a computer or tablet, there is a raised hand button. And if you are calling in by telephone, dial *9 to raise your hand. Even if you previously indicated which item you wish to speak, when you registered, you must raise your hand at the beginning of the item to be added to the queue. For anyone giving verbal comments today in Spanish, please indicate so at the beginning of your testimony, and our interpreter will assist you. During your comment, please follow any instructions the interpreter provides. When the comment period begins, the order of commenters is determined by who raises their hand first. We will call each commenter by name and will activate each commenter's audio when it is their turn to speak. For those calling in, we will identify you by the last three digits of your phone number. We will announce the next three or so commenters in the queue so you are ready to testify when we come to you. Please note your testimony will not appear by video. For all commenters, please state your name for the record before you speak. This is especially important for those calling in by phone. Each commenter will have a time limit of 2 minutes, although this may change at the chair's discretion. During public testimony, you will see a timer on the screen. For those calling in by phone, we will let you know when you have 30 seconds left and when your time is up. Your time will be doubled if you require Spanish interpretation. To submit written comments, please visit CARB's Send Us Your Comments page or look at the public agenda on our website for links to submit your comment. Written comments will be accepted on each item until the chair closes the record for that board item. If you experience technical difficulties, please call 805-772-2715 so an IT person can assist. Thank you. I'll turn the microphone back to Chair Randolph.
All right. Thank you. I would like to take a moment to note that CARB is accepting nominations for the 2024 Hagen-Schmidt Clean Air Awards through January 10th, 2025. The awardees will receive this prestigious award for making significant lifetime contributions to improving air quality and climate change science. For more information, please visit our website as shown on the screen now. Okay, the only item on the open meeting agenda is item 24-7-1, the proposed fiscal year 2024-25 funding plan for clean transportation incentives. If you are here with us in the room and wish to comment on this item, please fill out a request to speak card as soon as possible and submit it to a board assistant. If you are joining us remotely and wish to comment on this item, please click the raise hand button or dial *9 now. We will first call on in-person commenters, followed by any remote commenters when we get to the public comment portion of the item. The Clean Transportation Incentives Funding Plan is a critically important part of CARB's broad portfolio of incentive programs. These incentives complement our planning and regulatory programs in reducing emissions and equitably increasing access to the cleanest available technologies. This year's state budget was a challenging one, with reductions across the board to many key state agencies and programs. As we will hear today, funding allocations for air quality and climate change programs were unfortunately no different. Nevertheless, this year's investments, while limited, continue to support equitable deployment of zero-emission vehicles, or ZEVs. The plan before us builds on the investments the state has made over the past decade and on the recent multi-year ZEV package to support wide-scale deployment of zero-emission vehicles and equipment and move us toward the target set in Governor Newsom's executive order. Expanding access to zero-emission vehicles and zero-emission mobility for priority populations is a key objective of CARB's work, and the funding plan is a critical tool for advancing this goal. With zero-emission technologies now widely available, this is an opportune time to continue making progress towards a clean transportation future. Dr. Cliff, would you please introduce the item?
Thank you, Chair Randolph. It is important to point out that incentive projects are a critical part of CARB's comprehensive strategy to accelerate the adoption of the cleanest technologies into California's dynamic economy. Through the 2024 budget invested, though the 2024 budget invested much less funding to the CARB incentive projects than in the past, the provided funds to the Air Quality Improvement Program are certainly meaningful. Incentive projects complement CARB's regulatory measures to ensure that reductions in air pollution and greenhouse gas emissions occur while clean transportation is made more accessible for all Californians. The proposed incentives you will hear about today are designed to support small fleets and businesses entering the zero-emission technology marketplace and predominantly benefit disadvantaged communities. The majority of available Air Quality Improvement Program funds are proposed to be allocated to two historically oversubscribed projects, innovative small e-fleets and clean off-road equipment. This allocation provides continued support to highly successful projects that reduce greenhouse gas emissions, criteria pollutants, and toxic air contaminant emissions. At the same time, we propose to allocate a portion of funds to a new project, the Zero Emission Truck Loan Pilot, that leverages funds with private investment. Together, all of these proposed investments focus on small fleets and small businesses while helping to advance our equity goals. We have coordinated closely with the California Energy Commission, California State Transportation Agency, and the Governor's Office of Business and Economic Development on the development of this plan. I want to particularly thank Hannon Rasool of the Energy Commission and Jesse Denver of the Governor's Office of Business and Economic Development for joining us today to support the proposed funding plan. I will now ask Stephanie Parent of the Mobile Source Control Division to begin the staff presentation. Stephanie?
Thank you, Dr. Cliff. Good morning, Chair Randolph and members of the board. Today, for the board's consideration, I'll present the proposed fiscal year 2024-25 funding plan for clean transportation incentives, also known as the proposed funding plan. After some brief background information, I'll provide updates on several of our projects. Then we'll review staff's recommendations before I conclude the presentation. CARB offers a full portfolio of incentive projects that help improve air quality and reduce the negative impacts of climate change. In 1998, CARB funded its first incentive program, the Carl Moyer Memorial Air Quality Standards Attainment Program. Since then, several additional programs have been developed, including the Funding Agricultural Replacement Measures for Emission Reductions, also known as FARMER, Community Air Protection Incentives, and the Volkswagen Mitigation Trust, as well as the Clean Transportation Incentives Program, which this funding plan covers. Note that the board heard updates on the Carl Moyer and FARMER programs at the October board meeting. CARB's incentives portfolio complements CARB's regulatory programs, which are separate and distinct, but work hand in hand. Now, I'll discuss our incentive projects overall. To improve air quality and reduce the negative impacts of climate change, California aims to have 5 million zero-emission vehicles on our roads by 2030. Additionally, we aim to accelerate the deployment of zero-emission technologies in the transportation sector, incorporate equity into all programs, and help expand Californians' transportation and mobility options. Some of these goals are spelled out in the governor's executive orders on zero-emission vehicles and equity. CARB has implemented clean transportation incentive projects that have supported these goals for a dozen years. They range from e-bikes to community projects and zero-emission semi-trucks and equipment. These projects are like a symphony, each varied and playing its unique role. Earlier projects helped to make zero-emission vehicles and technologies mainstream, while more recent projects were developed to be equity-based. Some help communities develop the solutions they need, while others are focused on a regional or state level. Today, these efforts help priority populations and small businesses and fleets to be able to participate in these projects to upgrade older, more polluting vehicles and equipment. This slide provides a sample of some of the project logos. Several themes emerged this year as staff developed the proposed funding plan. We have a lower budget amount to work with due to the state budget deficit. We're continuing to advance equity in communities and for small businesses and fleet owners. Since the Clean Vehicle Rebate Project closed in 2023, which allowed anyone to receive incentive dollars for zero-emission vehicles, we are focusing on priority populations through projects such as the regional Clean Cars for All program and the statewide Driving Clean Assistance program. On the medium and heavy-duty vehicle and equipment side, we are focusing incentive funds to small businesses and fleets. We're also working to ensure that projects have continuous funding and remain open when possible to avoid funding gaps. Now, I'll provide a general overview of our funding sources. CARB's clean transportation incentives are generally made up of funding from three primary sources, including the Greenhouse Gas Reduction Fund for the Low Carbon Transportation Program, the Air Quality Improvement Fund for the Air Quality Improvement Program, and the State General Fund for specific projects or project categories. For fiscal year 2024-25, funds were only appropriated to CARB for the Air Quality Improvement Fund. I'll cover that later in the presentation, but first, I'll talk more about priority populations. Over the past decade, funds allocated to the variety of projects in our portfolio that have benefited priority populations have increased overall. As previously mentioned, earlier projects such as the Clean Vehicle Rebate Project and the Clean Truck and Bus Voucher Incentive Project, which is also known as HVIP, focused on getting zero-emission vehicles and equipment into the mainstream. In fiscal year 2013-14, greenhouse gas reduction funds became available, and CARB was directed to tailor projects toward people who live in disadvantaged communities. This is around the time the first regional Clean Cars for All projects began in the South Coast and San Joaquin Valley air districts. As you can see in the graph, in fiscal year 2013-14, 0% of our funds were specifically directed toward priority populations. As projects matured and more projects launched, we and our partners began to increase the percentage of funds benefiting priority populations. In fiscal year 2021-22, 53% of our funds benefited priority populations, and in fiscal year 2023-24, 60% of funds benefited that same group. While only the Greenhouse Gas Reduction Fund requires a priority populations target, we apply the target to all the investments we make through the Clean Transportation Incentives Program. On the next two slides, I'd like to share some examples of positive feedback we've received from project participants, such as through CalFleet Advisor Technical Assistance. Mr. Carrillo said that, quote, CalFleet Advisor put me ahead of the curve with transitioning my fleet to zero emissions. It was a highly needed resource for myself and my business. I'd like to also read part of a quote we received from Diane, one of our Driving Clean Assistance Program participants. Thank you and your organization for making it possible for me to acquire my new electric vehicle. This never would have happened without the assistance of your organization and appointed mentors who kindly walked me through the process and made me aware of the financial help available. This year, to develop the proposed funding plan before you, staff continued to expand outreach and engagement through efforts such as the monthly evening community meetings and the annual Clean Transportation Equity Incentives Symposium. Staff also launched the Regional Outreach Coordinators Initiative throughout California to enhance awareness of clean transportation regulations and incentive projects, and to identify transportation solutions. CARB staff again offered a funding plan community survey, analyzed the results, and are working to incorporate feedback into projects where possible. And staff continued to participate in the Zero Emission Vehicle Equity Task Force. In October, CARB and the California Energy Commission funded the annual Clean Mobility Forum presented by the Clean Mobility Equity Alliance. Lastly, throughout the year, CARB and its partners hold clean truck and bus showcases where fleet owners and operators can test drive the latest clean technology vehicles and off-road equipment. Now, I'll move on to project updates. While the projects that I'll cover in the next few slides did not receive funding appropriations and staff does not have any proposed policy changes for them this year, we would like to provide the board with some updates. These updates will cover three light-duty projects and a general update on the sustainable community-based transportation equity incentive projects. First up is the Regional Clean Cars for All program. Since 2015, Clean Cars for All has provided more than $165 million to help over 20,000 Californians purchase cleaner vehicles while removing older and often less reliable polluting vehicles from the state's roadways. 97% of participants lived in disadvantaged community zip codes. 52% lived in a disadvantaged community census tract, and 89% resided in households that earned less than 225% of the federal poverty level. The current federal poverty level amounts are less than or equal to $45,180 for a one-person household, or less than or equal to $93,600 for a four-person household. The Clean Cars for All program is closely tied to the statewide Driving Clean Assistance Program, which offers Clean Cars for All and financing assistance to all areas of the state not covered by the five regional air district Clean Cars for All programs. It allows low-income applicants to obtain an incentive for a clean vehicle when they don't have an older vehicle to scrap, and low-interest loans for participants that both scrap or don't scrap a car. Last year, the board directed staff to move fiscal year 2023-24 funding between the statewide Driving Clean Assistance Program and the regional Clean Cars for All program should air districts run out of funds. That situation occurred earlier this year, prompting staff to shift $14 million from the Driving Clean Assistance Program to the San Joaquin Valley Clean Cars for All program. This adjustment also aligns with the state budget direction to shift fiscal year 2023-24 funds to support district programs if needed. Next, I'll cover updates on our Zero Emission Assurance project. Staff aims to implement the Zero Emission Assurance project beginning in 2025. I'll provide you with some information about the project criteria determined to date. In 2018, Assembly Bill 193, authored by Assemblymember Sabrina Cervantes, established the Zero Emission Assurance Project to assist lower-income Californians reduce their risk of buying a used zero-emission vehicle by providing a rebate or vehicle service contract for a repair or replacement battery or fuel cell component to project participants. Over the past year, staff has identified, through our public process, general project criteria, which includes minimum vehicle and applicant eligibility requirements, limits on the number of incentives per vehicle, as well as household income limits, and that the project be implemented by the Community Housing Development Corporation, a nonprofit organization, through the Driving Clean Assistance Program. This implementation will be accomplished in partnership with the Foundation for California Community Colleges. This project has $10 million allocated to it from prior years. Now, I'll provide an update on the California e-bike incentive project. Over the past year, staff, and the project administrator for the California e-bike project initiated a soft launch in four communities. They also proposed several small implementation changes based on lessons learned. The dark blue boxes on the slide provide information on project operation and requirements. The first two boxes reference applicant participation requirements, which align with the needs-based project design that aims to support low-income applicants and provide an appropriate base incentive. The third box highlights requirements e-bikes must meet. The bottom three boxes show implementation changes, such as flexibility for applicants to customize their e-bike to fit their needs. The project administrator is also focused on additional outreach and education for participants as well as retailers. We recognize there's a lot of anticipation for this project and are very excited for it to launch before the end of the calendar year. Finally, the Sustainable Community-Based Transportation Equity Incentive Projects, or mobility projects, continue to be an important part of CARB's incentives portfolio. CARB staff, project administrators, and community partners have implemented approximately $275 million for over 100 projects over the past decade. CARB staff and its partners have learned a lot in that time and will continue to work to improve in six areas. First, adapt project selection criteria to overcome implementation and long-term sustainability challenges. Second, provide technical assistance to grantees through current and future project administrators and direct staff engagement. Third, work to improve grant application processes based on recommendations from past mobility project applicants. Fourth, support mobility services in areas of the state where past project funds were exhausted. Fifth, continue to refine our metrics approach to demonstrate project impacts. And lastly, evaluate the mobility project's needs-based models and alternatives through public collaborations. Now for staff's recommendations. In the next few slides, I'll go over the appropriation we received from the legislature, as well as staff's proposed project allocations. While not all current incentive projects will receive new funding, staff proposes policy recommendations for several projects for your consideration. These recommendations would help staff and project administrators stretch funding and more efficiently implement existing projects. The proposed policy recommendations are for four medium and heavy duty projects and two light duty projects. CARB received just under $35 million this year from the Air Quality Improvement Fund. Since the passage of Assembly Bill 126 in 2023, air quality improvement funds must be used to fund projects that reduce criteria air pollutants in the medium and heavy duty vehicle and technology space. Staff proposes to allocate these funds as follows. Just under $15 million to each of the innovative small e-fleet pilot project and the clean off-road equipment project, and $5 million for the zero-emission truck loan pilot project. These projects were selected to receive funding this year because they are running low on funds, and as previously stated, we are working to ensure that projects have continuous funding and remain open when possible to avoid funding gaps. Next, I'll cover proposed changes to several projects, as well as an update on one project. The innovative small e-fleet pilot project explores new solutions to barriers faced by small fleets. Since its launch in August 2022, the project has invested approximately $70 million to support 105 small fleets with innovative solutions to accelerate the adoption of zero-emission medium and heavy-duty vehicles. As of October, there are approximately $27 million available for medium and heavy-duty zero-emission vehicles through the Innovative Small E-Fleet Pilot Project. This year, staff proposes to allocate just under $15 million to this project. Staff plans to work with interested parties in the year ahead to explore other potential ways to meet small fleet needs, such as the design of a used truck voucher concept to help foster the market by reducing costs, supporting residual values, and increasing vehicle supply. The goal would be to accelerate the development of an affordable secondary vehicle market that would provide small fleets with more flexibility. In addition, staff is exploring other solutions, such as insurance access and how to support the incorporation of zero-emission vehicles into fleet operations through advanced fleet management services. Now, on to the Clean Off-Road Equipment Project. The Clean Off-Road Equipment Project continues to provide incentives for a wide variety of zero-emission off-road equipment. There are 500 model configurations of zero-emission off-road equipment available in the project today from 61 different manufacturers. In total, CORE has provided over 3,000 vouchers for off-road equipment purchases, plus an additional 27,000 pieces of zero-emission commercial landscaping equipment. As previously mentioned, staff proposes to allocate just under $15 million to this project, with funds becoming available in the summer of 2025, plus another $4 million remaining for commercial landscaping equipment that will be available early next year. Key policy recommendations this year include to direct this year's limited funds only to small businesses and public agencies, graduate zero-emission off-road terminal tractors to other programs such as the Carl Moyer program, and increase incentive amounts for the largest forklifts now emerging on the market. Next up is the zero-emission truck loan pilot project. The zero-emission truck loan pilot project provides expanded financing opportunities to smaller fleets that wish to purchase heavy-duty zero-emission vehicles. Staff proposes to allocate $5 million to this project. Since the zero-emission truck loan pilot is a newer project, there are no proposed policy changes this year. So, I'll provide some project updates. The project opened on May 1st. The proposed $5 million allocation would build upon the $5 million allocated in fiscal year 2022-23, and the remaining funds from the now-closed Truck Loan Assistance Program for a total of $14 million. In addition, we anticipate that the State Treasurer's Office will receive match funding from the Federal Inflation Reduction Act via the National Clean Investment Fund to enhance the loan support projects next year. Lastly, CARB closely coordinated with the California Energy Commission to create and fund an accompanying infrastructure support project for zero-emission fueling infrastructure. Southern California Edison is also funding a similar loan support program for customers in its service territory. Now, on to clean truck and bus voucher incentives. The Clean Truck and Bus Voucher Incentive Project, also known as HVIP, continues to support the cleanest available technology with over 160 models of zero-emission trucks and buses from 52 different manufacturers. In total, HVIP has provided about 9,000 vouchers for zero-emission trucks and buses. Staff propose 5 project criteria changes. First, increase the incentive amount for zero-emission truck conversion kits from 50% to 75%, relative to a standard new truck voucher. Second, launch a new pilot voucher certificate process for Class 2B vehicle purchases. Third, allow a maximum of 5 vouchers per fleet to receive double the funding amount of a standard new truck voucher. Currently, small fleets can double up to 20 vouchers. The change ensures that funds are available to more small fleets. Fleets would still be permitted to apply for standard vouchers beyond the first 5. Fourth, provide a technical clarification of fleet size eligibility to align with the Advanced Clean Fleets Regulation by changing the maximum eligible fleet size from 50 to 49, as previously approved by the board. The HVIP fleet size limit begins on January 1st, 2025. And lastly, as the board directed at the October board meeting, staff continues to assess zero-emission truck pricing to determine why manufacturers sell Class 8 trucks at a higher cost in California than in Europe, as detailed in the September 25th memo to the board that is posted on our website. As part of this effort, staff will work with interested parties to develop a potential recommendation and implementation mechanism for a manufacturer's suggested retail price cap that would apply to HVIP-eligible trucks and buses. We anticipate bringing a recommendation to the board in next year's funding plan. Shifting our focus to the light-duty projects, this year's state budget requires CARB to consider metrics when allocating future funding to both the statewide Driving Clean Assistance Program and the Regional Clean Cars for All programs. Staff, in collaboration with the California Air Pollution Control Officers Association, or CAPCOA, the regional air districts, and other interested parties, proposes to modify the future funding allocations that secure funding for these projects. This slide's pie chart shows the percentage of total allocated funds that each air district and the Driving Clean Assistance Program would receive. The majority, 91%, would go to the five regional air district programs and 9% to the statewide Driving Clean Assistance Program. This would ensure consistency and predictability of funding for all projects, allowing districts and the statewide project to adjust implementation to reflect funding realities. Though there's no funding this year, having this future allocation system in place now allows us to act swiftly as the next budget is implemented. It allows us to and our partners to more effectively advocate together for future funding. Now, moving on to our statewide Driving Clean Assistance Program. This program recently launched and is opening region by region with the plan to serve all California residents just after the first of the year. Imperial kicked things off in September with Region 1, shown at the bottom of the map, followed by Regions 2 and 3 in October, shown in the middle of the map, and Region 4 in mid-November, shown at the top of the map. The map also shows the five existing regional Clean Cars for All programs, as well as regions that will open soon. Currently, among the open regions, we've received nearly 200 applications that are in various stages of processing. Additionally, project administrators have held at least three ride and drive events among the regions collectively. The Community Housing Development Corporation, a minority-owned, community-based nonprofit, was selected to administer this project after a competitive solicitation. Their model aims to foster relationships with trusted partners in impacted communities by offering full-service financial resources to applicants. Public engagement has been positive, and community members continue to submit applications across the four open regions. That said, staff has one proposed policy change for this year, which would impact the financing assistance portion of the project. Staff proposes to increase the loan cap amount from $30,000 to $45,000 to cover the full cost of the purchase price cap for eligible vehicles. Next, I'll cover some significant comments we received. Furthermore, regarding Clean Cars for All, staff has received some comments requesting that CARB shift prior year funding from the statewide Clean Cars for All portion of the Driving Clean Assistance Program to the regional air district Clean Cars for All programs to ensure that established programs remain open. In an effort to address these concerns, staff offers a few important considerations. First, in fiscal year 2022-23, the governor and the legislature established the statewide Clean Cars for All program that is now known as DCAP, or the Driving Clean Assistance Program. by specifically appropriating a minimum of $125 million to the program. Any movement of these funds requires legislative action. Second, as previously mentioned, the grant agreement was competitively bid and awarded to the Community Housing Development Corporation, a small minority-owned community-based nonprofit with broad partnerships. The program was designed with the full solicitation amount in mind, and changes to the grant agreement would impact small community-based organization partners statewide. While staff shares the concerns raised regarding the lack of funding for this fiscal year, we encourage air districts that may exhaust current funds prior to the next budget to refer applicants and subcontractors to the statewide program. Access other funds available to them, such as community air protection funds or Assembly Bill 923 funding, and to partner with us to encourage funding in next year's budget. That concludes staff's detailed proposals for funding allocations and project changes. Now, I'll wrap up the presentation with staff's recommendation. The proposed funding plan continues to support the state's air quality, climate, and equity goals. Through the transportation incentive projects, the state has invested billions of dollars in transformative change in the mobile sector, and much of that funding has gone or will go to priority populations. The plan also complements and supports CARB's regulatory programs. Therefore, staff recommends that the board approve the proposed fiscal year 2024-25 funding plan for clean transportation incentives, which includes staff's recommended funding allocations as well as recommended project changes. Thank you for your attention today. Now, I'd like to introduce Hanan Rasool from the California Energy Commission and Jesse Denver from the Governor's Office of Business and Economic Development to share a few remarks.
Good morning. My name is Hanan Rasool, and I'm the Director of the Fuels and Transportation Division with the California Energy Commission. Thank you for inviting me to say a few words. I'd like to congratulate and express my support for CARB's 24-25 Clean Transportation Incentives Funding Program. The Energy Commission and CARB have a long history of collaboration, and it continues to get stronger and more coordinated every year. CARB's leadership has helped increase ZEV sales, with over 25% of in-state passenger vehicle sales being electric vehicles. And this investment plan will further support medium-duty, heavy-duty, zero-emission vehicle adoption. While we're in the early days of MDHD relative to light-duty, we're seeing success stories and progress. These investments will further support that. The Energy Commission and CARB coordinate MDHD investments so that small operators and fleets have funding incentives for the vehicles and the infrastructure. We should continue to emphasize and highlight our many success stories so Californians see how these programs benefit them, their health, and their longevity. Even beyond the specific investment plan, I want to thank CARB for their sustained leadership over the past years and look forward to that ongoing leadership. California is unique in its ability to plan for the long term while navigating the near term. It's a difficult job, but I'm always impressed by CARB's ability to help shape a cleaner California from all levels of the organization. I and the Energy Commission look forward to continued collaboration and supporting the private market succeed in this important transition, improving the health of our communities and ensuring equity. And so with that, I just want to again say thank you and congratulations on developing the proposed funding plan.
Good morning, Chair Randolph and members of the board. I'm here to express my support for the approval of the 2024-25 funding plan for clean transportation incentives. CARB's investments and the coordinated efforts across the state agencies have been pivotal in advancing ZEV market development. This funding plan will further our state's goals and continue to deliver direct benefits to communities disproportionately affected by transportation-related air pollution. I'm especially encouraged by the ongoing funding for the medium heavy duty sector and offer a few examples. Procuring new market technologies can be challenging for some stakeholders, and I appreciate CARB's consideration of public entities, California Native American tribal governments, and nonprofits in the policy revisions of HVIP. GoBiz is also values CARB's forward-thinking exploration of a used truck voucher pilot within ISEF, which will help develop an affordable secondary, medium, and heavy-duty ZEV market, providing small businesses in California with greater flexibility for their fleets. GoBiz appreciates CARB's analysis of the CORE program and the proposed funding allocations, which are targeted to meet the greatest clean off-road equipment market needs. Many of the proposed voucher adjustments align with large lift capacity equipment requirements at our ports and enable market pathways for emerging products. In closing, reinventing the way we move people and goods is no small feat. It requires the coordinated support of many complex elements. This is hard work. This hard work is made possible through ongoing partnerships between CARB, state agencies, industry stakeholders, and our communities. Together, we will continue to advance the ZEV market in California and beyond. I again want to thank CARB and the board members and staff for developing a great plan that balances many priorities and look forward to our continued collaboration.
All right, thank you. We will now hear from the public who signed up to speak on this item, either by submitting a request to speak card or with a raised hand in Zoom. I will ask the board clerks to begin calling the public commenters.
Thank you, Chair Randolph. We currently have six commenters who have signed up to speak in person and six more with their hands raised in Zoom. I apologize in advance if I mispronounce your name. Our first commenter is Donald Gilmore.
To the chair and board members, good morning. My name is Donald Gilmore. I'm the executive director of Community Housing Development Corporation, and better known as CHDC. We're in support of CARB's 2024 and 2025 funding plan and urge the board to approve it. CHDC has been at the forefront of administering the Financial Assistance Clean Vehicle Incentive Program and now the joint program, which is both statewide finance assistance and statewide clean cars for all. We actually piloted the first two programs, and with that, we were able to move on to demonstrate how we are successful when working in communities that are underserved. CHDC went through a competitive process and was awarded the funding for DCAP for 25 and beyond. It's hard to understand why we have to continue to be subject to the threat of calling back funds that are already approved. The board, when it have we have not violated any of the contract terms. I think it's kind of unfair to the implementation of the program and demonstrates a lack of understanding to the need to serve those communities that have been able, which are, you know, not able to take advantage of some of these programs. CHCC has a dual purpose where it administers the DCAP program and has financial capability services that, that work with residents to that ordinarily not favorable interest rates that they get. And so when buying a vehicle, it makes it a little tough. And so what we have seen in the past is more predatory lending with interest rates over 20%. Which leads often while to less cash flow for families with limited resources. CHCC's worked out terms with multiple lenders to cap the interest rate at 8% and below, drastically reducing the risk of default to the buyers. CHCC and the state has been recognized nationally and globally for the DCAP program. Others all over the country want to replicate what we are doing in their own communities. Please do the right thing by reaffirming the agreement with CHCC and move forward with DCAP, not being subject to going through the process of having funds being in jeopardy. CHCC is in partnership and achieves impact outcome utilizing local community-based partners implementing the statewide program. What will this say to the community-based organizations who are excited about working with our organization if these funds are taken away? Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Okay. Our next commenter is Christian Corby.
Oh, nice. Thank you. Hello, my name is Christian Corby, and I'm the Deputy Executive Director at the California Electric Transportation Coalition, or CalETC. I'd like to thank the Air Resources Board members and staff for all of your hard work on this funding plan, especially given the difficult decisions that come with having limited funding for critical ZEV transportation, air quality, and climate change programs. There's a lot in this funding plan that CalETC supports. That said, we believe that it's the best policy to ensure that all ZEV equity incentive programs, including both the Air District-administered Clean Cars for All programs and the statewide Drive Clean Assistance Program, be sustained with existing funding so they can provide ZEV benefits to equity communities throughout California. We recognize that this will require CARB to make a difficult choice and shift some funding that was committed to the statewide DCAP program to the district Clean Cars for All programs. However, we believe that if CARB applies the draft allocation formula to all or a portion of the available remaining funding, all of these programs will be able to stay open in the coming fiscal year and beyond. It is clear that the Air District programs are working. They're delivering benefits to people who need it most. We must act with urgency and direct available funding towards these equity communities. Regarding the medium and heavy duty investments, CalETC supports CARB's proposal to review the HVIP voucher process. To streamline these processes, it will really help fleets and truck dealers reduce the administrative and financial burdens that delay the processing of the vouchers. CalETC remains concerned that limiting fleet eligibility to 50 trucks has and will continue to depress the medium and heavy duty ZEV market and jeopardize our ability to meet our ZEV goals. I checked the HVIP website on Tuesday this week and was surprised to see that the standard HVIP voucher is closed. CalETC continues to recommend that CARB and CalSTART provide more granular data.
Thank you. That concludes your time.
Thank you very much. I appreciate your time.
Thank you. Our next commenter is Brandon Wong.
Good morning, Madam Chair and members of the board. My name is Brandon Wong on behalf of Valley Clean Air Now. We'd like to echo, first thank the board for their leadership on advancing ZEV equity first and foremost. But generally, we would like to echo the comments made by CalETC on the importance of maintaining continuous funding for California's suite of ZEV equity programs. Valley Clean Air Now is a 501c3 charity committed to improving air quality throughout the San Joaquin Valley, a region with the worst air quality in the country. We help working families scrap their high-polluting vehicles and replace them with cleaner options, which results in reduced transportation costs, improved quality of life, all with fewer greenhouse gas emissions. We appreciate the work CARB has done in putting together this year's funding plan, but we are concerned that many regional programs may not be able to continue operations beyond the next several months, especially in light of the state's highly constrained budget outlook over the next several years. Given that uncertainty and given the ongoing need for equity-based incentives in communities throughout the state, we believe the board has an opportunity to leverage existing funds to sustain CARB ZEV equity programs over the next 2 years, including the Air District administered Clean Cars for All programs and the Driving Clean Assistance Program. Demonstrating the value of ZEVs for low-income households in our state's most impacted communities will not only enable more widespread ZEV adoption, but it will help in our effort to secure longer-term funds targeted at those most in need. In closing, we'd like to once again thank the board for its effort to help reduce transportation costs for working families and for improving air quality in our most environmentally burdened communities. Thank you.
Our next commenter is Bill McGovern.
Thanks. Bill McGovern with the Coalition for Clean Air. It's really unfortunate that there's so little funding in the funding plan this year because these incentives have played an important role as complements to the foundational regulatory programs that this board has established. But given the limited funds available, we really agree with this plan's focus on equity for communities and for small businesses, because we know that to make the ZEV transition work, we need to focus our assistance on those who really need it. ZEVs are already a very attractive option for those who can afford them. So we need to bring everybody along who can't necessarily afford that purchase. When it comes to heavy-duty vehicles, we agree with dedicating the small amounts of the AQIP funding to heavy-duty and to off-road. For the light-duty equity programs, we do support the proposed formula for allocation, and we think that it should apply to existing funds, not just to future funding that may or may not materialize, because we want to see successful statewide program, driving clean assistance program, and also make sure that the existing successful air district programs do not have to go dark. It's really bad for communities and for their trust in CARB and the districts and their programs when we have a stop and start and people can't rely on these. So the good news is there is money available to keep these programs, all of them, going for probably a couple years. Thank you.
Thank you. Rocky Fernandez.
Good morning to the chair, board members, and staff. My name is Rocky Fernandez. I'm the Director of Government Affairs for the Center for Sustainable Energy. We've long enjoyed our partnership with CARB on the Clean Vehicle Rebate Project, which helped increase electric vehicle sales to more than a quarter of new purchases. We have proudly and maybe a little sadly sent out the last rebate check for that program. As part of our strong partnership with CHDC, I'm here to report that its successor, the Joint Statewide Clean Cars for All program and Driving Clean Assistance program, are up and running and will continue to roll out through December and the first quarter of 2025. We encourage you to move forward with the staff proposal and give these newer programs the time to grow and thrive in all parts of the state. DCAP is playing an important role in reaching those parts of the state that couldn't get Clean Cars for All before and might not have a vehicle to scrap in return. It also serves as a backstop in case the Clean Cars for All district monies run out per the legislative agreement earlier this year. As we know from CVRP, continuity and equity matter. These programs provide the continuity of commitment to clean vehicles and equity, not just in income categories, but to the areas of the state that couldn't access Clean Cars for All and really need that financing assistance. The residents of these counties deserve to be a part of the clean transportation revolution. As an administrator, we build trust with CARB and with the community. When we have abrupt changes in policy or funding, that trust is strained and has a real impact on us internally, as well as negatively affecting the trust we've built in the communities we've served. Finally, while we've had great success in electrifying light-duty vehicles in California, the threat of federal government scaling back on tax credits and financing that might have backfilled some of what CVRP used to do is very real. We need to ensure that Clean Cars for All and DCAP are there, statewide and fully funded to continue our progress. And with that, we thank you for all your work. Thank you.
Thank you. Leah Abate.
Good morning, Chair and Board members. My name is Leah Abate, Senior Director for Equity and Community Impact at the Foundation for California Community Colleges. We are a partner and subcontractor of CHGC's award for DCAP. Thank you for all the efforts to put forth the funding plan, which I urge you to approve. Statewide CC4A program represents the first CC4A investment specifically intended for low-income and disadvantaged communities outside of implementing air districts. We recognize the concerns expressed in public comments regarding the stop and start access to clean vehicle incentives due to programs running out of funds. However, given this year's proposed funding plan's focus on communities that have not previously had as much direct help to improve air quality, any recommendations to shift prior year funds from DCAP to air districts would seem to go against CARB's objectives. Further, the notion of shifting legislatively appropriated funds, one through a competitive RFP by a local Black-led CBO, sets a dangerous precedent and threatens the public's confidence in government investments. It risks sending the message that priority populations in areas outside of implementing air districts will continue to receive less investment and prioritization from the state. Shifting funding or reneging on an executed contract is unnecessary when solutions exist that preserve the trust in state partnerships and ensure access to incentives for communities. Programs with available funding can serve residents in areas where an existing program has run out of funds. This happened several times during the administration of the Clean Vehicle Assistance Program, the predecessor of statewide DCAP, without the need for shifting funds between programs or otherwise altering contractual agreements. DCAP operates as a need-based model rooted in equity, which marks a critical shift from the first-come, first-served model and better aligns with stated equity objectives. I urge members of the board to approve the proposed funding plan, and thank you for your time.
Thank you. We currently have 12 commenters with their hands raised in Zoom. I apologize in advance if I mispronounce your name. Would like to remind all commenters to please speak slowly and clearly for our interpreters and court reporter. The first five speakers are Tim McRae, Maya Inigo Anderson, Nick Barrett, Chris Chavez, and Josh Harmon. And with that, Tim McRae, I have activated your mic. You may unmute and begin. Never mind, it looks like
you. Good morning, Chair Randolph and board members. I'm Tim McRae with the California Hydrogen Business Council, the largest hydrogen trade association in the U.S., representing 110 companies and community stakeholders. The fuel cell electric vehicle industry is at a pivotal point, with new OEMs and new products recently becoming available, including the first North American refuse truck, which is doing real-life customer trials in California today. These new OEMs and truck platforms provide more diversity of products to California fleets while also driving use cases that are strongly aligned to CARB goals. Fuel cell electric refuse trucks and transit buses both reduce emissions in California neighborhoods. We must have incentives in the next 6 to 8 months to get these platforms off the ground. Otherwise, the whole industry, including customers and end users, will suffer. While we recognize the limited AQIP funding available, we strongly believe that some funds should be allocated to the standard HVIP program, which as of Tuesday was closed because of all of the vouchers being subscribed. We ask this addition because the standard HVIP has track record and attraction for driving direct investments in zero emission technology as demonstrated by the success of the program. By contrast, the ICIF project does not have as proven a track record, and the Clean Off-Road Equipment Program does not necessarily target vehicles with the largest emissions like HVIP does for heavy-duty trucking. We also support more funding for transit set-aside within the AQIP program to meet the rapid growing orders and market for hydrogen fuel cell bus electric buses. Lastly, we suggest the following changes to HVIP project criteria. CARB should consider outreach to dealers to confirm their interest in unredeemed assigned vouchers so as to make up unneeded vouchers available. And CARB should have a robust waiting list and contingency process for future allocations and available funds. Thank you for your work on this. We look forward to your work in continuing to support programs like HVIP.
Thank you. Maya Inigo Anderson, I have activated your mic. You may unmute and begin.
Good morning. Maya Inigo Anderson here on behalf of Communities for a Better Environment. We represent environmental justice community residents in East Oakland, Richmond, Southeast Los Angeles, and Wilmington. We overall support the funding plan and appreciate CARB staff's hard work on this, along with making a number of community meetings available. We're especially encouraged about the anticipated December 2024 rollout of the new e-bike incentive program. A lot of our youth members especially are interested in this program. And we also recognize that CARB has made equity and clean vehicle incentives for low-income communities a priority, and that Clean Cars for All targets those Californians making less than 300% of the federal poverty line. However, we would welcome the ongoing communication with CARB staff about the need to make sure we close disparity gaps in EV ownership. This may include analyzing the findings of the recent UCLA Luskin report entitled An Analysis of California Electric Vehicle Incentive Distribution Rates Since 2015. This report suggests assuring that there are funding available for not just low-income DAC residents, but also specifically for extremely low-income DAC residents. Furthermore, we would like to highlight the importance of having public information on the CARB website to help the public track the exact dollar amount of programs that has been spent. This can help CBOs and our nonpartisan state budget advocacy to make sure we protect these essential programs. We would also encourage CARB to focus heavy-duty and medium-duty vehicle incentives on small fleets. And with that, I thank you for your time.
Thank you. Nick Barrett, I have activated your mic.
Hello, Nick Barrett from, I represent Hyzon Motors. We sell heavy-duty fuel cell electric trucks and are an approved OEM via HVIP. I'm here to reiterate much of the message shared by Mr. McRae from the California Hydrogen Business Council. At Hyzon, we have recently launched our next generation Class 8 heavy-duty tractor truck, and we are the first and only refuse collection vehicle available in the U.S. today that is trialing on California roads today. We have seen significant demand specifically for our refuse collection vehicle from cities, counties, and municipalities interested in deploying the vehicle, and we are on the verge of closing several large orders with customers that will scale. HVIP is absolutely required to complete these sales and get these trucks on the road. I should note that these trucks have the ability to disproportionately impact air quality and emissions as they are in our community today, as they're driving through communities and neighborhoods. We must have these incentives through the first half of 2025 in order to get these new platforms off the ground. Otherwise, the whole industry, including communities, customers, and other stakeholders to heavy-duty trucking, will suffer from lack of product diversity in these new applications. Continued HVIP funding is absolutely required to maintain the traction of the HVIP program, particularly within the fuel cell electric vehicle segment. Lastly, we'd like to strongly advocate for changes to the HVIP project criteria focused on driving more equitable distribution of funds. Some OEMs are holding up to $200 million of unredeemed vouchers. We have serious doubts in their ability to deliver these, and we ask that they be redistributed. Similarly, 30% of vouchers are granted to a small group of OEMs. CARB should enforce the 100 unredeemed vouchers available to those specific OEMs today. Vouchers above the 100 soft cap should be canceled and redistributed to the HVIP fund to drive new market entrants and new platforms. Thank you for your consideration.
Thank you. Chris Chavez, I've activated your mic.
Yes. Good morning, board members. Chris Chavez, Coalition for Clean Air. We appreciate the work of CARB staff and the many, many times we've had the opportunity to dialogue with them. While it's unfortunate this funding plan is not as bold as prior years, we understand that is due to the state budget. Transportation is a larger source of climate and health-harming pollution in California. We urge the governor and the legislature to invest in clean, healthy air by supporting our clean transportation programs. We congratulate CARB on the expansion of Clean Cars for All through the DCAP program into Imperial Valley and other states, other areas of the states that are not covered by the regional programs. We urge CARB, however, to ensure that both DCAP and regional Clean Cars for All programs are funded. We hope CARB is on track to restart the e-bike program by the end of this year, as California needs clean transportation options that aren't premised on car ownership. We would also like more up-to-date information on active and inactive clean mobility programs, and we support funding for effective clean mobility programs that, again, are not premised on car ownership. Given the limited state funding, we need more data on the utility of the Zero Emission Assurance Program to ensure that the limited clean transportation dollars are being spent optimally. And lastly, we support the funding plan's changes and allocations to the medium and heavy duty space. In particular, we continue to support the fleet size limits for HVIP, as this is an important equity policy and making sure that our most polluted communities are directly benefiting from this very important program that is helping to clean up goods movement. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Josh Harmon, I've activated your mic.
Good morning. My name is Josh Harmon, and I'm speaking on behalf of Pacific Gas and Electric Company. We appreciate staff for their significant efforts developing this plan, especially given the challenges of limited funding for critical ZEV transportation, air quality, and climate programs. We believe the Clean Cars for All programs and the statewide Drive Clean Assistance Program are both critical to the state's clean transportation goals. Accordingly, we believe it is important to ensure that both of these programs be sustained with existing funding so they can provide ZEV benefits to equity communities throughout all of California, and not just in specific geographies. We recognize that this will require CARB to make changes in how it allocates funding between the statewide DCAP program and the Air District Clean Cars for All programs. We believe that if CARB applies the draft allocation formula to the remaining funding, then all of these programs will be able to stay open for the coming fiscal year and beyond. In our experience, providing program continuity across geographies is critical for maintaining consumer confidence and driving equitable EV adoption. In many cases, these programs complement programs offered by PG&E. But for this to continue effectively, CARB should avoid a patchwork of funding that can lead to customer confusion. These reasons, and because it is unclear whether the legislature will authorize additional funding for these equity programs, PG&E encourages the board today to direct the use of the draft allocation formula to ensure consistent availability of this funding within the overall funding limitations. We appreciate CARB's consideration of these recommendations and its continued collaboration in advancing the state's clean transportation goals. Thank you.
Okay, next five speakers, we have Marissa Brown, Maria Ruiz, Virgil Looney, Brett Zuner, and Kaylin Scott Peoples. Marissa, I've activated your mic. You may unmute and begin.
Good morning. On behalf of the Greenlining Institute, I'm calling in general support of CARB's 2024-2025 funding plan, contingent on several outstanding concerns. The UCLA Luskin Center recent report on vehicle incentive distribution found that low-income households and disadvantaged communities have the lowest participation in CARB programs, yet serve to benefit the most from these investments. Given the limited resources, CARB should move towards a more intentional and targeted approach to get these incentives in the hands of low-income households who live in disadvantaged communities and have older vehicles. We also request that the Clean Cars for All and Drive Clean Assistance Program funding formula that has been designed for future years be applied to existing funds, as there are no guarantees that funding will be available in future years. We want to make sure that all programs have adequate funding and avoid any of them going dark, so let's apply this formula now and ensure we're tracking the needed data to make these decisions. We request more data be made available of the clean mobility programs. As of now, it's unclear how the projects are going, benefits being provided, and what level of support will be needed to sustain these programs. We also request that CARB update their ZEV Insights webpage to have more detailed public information on participation data and funding availability. For medium and heavy duty vehicles, we support the suggested change in ICEF to allow vouchers for the purchase of used trucks, which will help in increasing accessibility of zero emission vehicles. We thank CARB staff for their work on putting this funding plan together, given the tough budget year. Thank you.
Thank you. Maria Ruiz, I have activated your mic. You may unmute and begin.
Good morning. It's Ruiz, Maria Ruiz. Good morning. My name is Maria Ruiz. I am the Associate Director of Outreach and Policy over at the Central California Asthma Collaborative. I want to thank the board for providing this space for community-based organizations like ours to play a part in these decisions. CCAC is working closely with CHDC and DCAP as a subcontractor in implementing hubs to assist residents throughout the state in applying for DCAP. We do believe that DCAP's approach of working with the residents in assisting with vehicle options and affordable vehicle loans capped at 8% is a critical component needed for the communities that we serve, and preventing them from falling victims to predatory loans, which unfortunately has been the case in past experiences when we've worked with residents. Cutting funding will exclude low-income families from clean transportation solutions, leaving them reliant on exploitative lenders or outdated high-emission cars that may not qualify for scrap and replace. CCAC, along with our partners over at Madera Coalition for Community Justice, would like DCAP's funding to remain intact for 2025 and beyond. Thank you.
Thank you. Virgil Looney, I've activated your mic.
Good morning. My name is Virgil Looney, and I'm the director of the Driving Clean Assistance Program, DCAP, at Community Housing Development Corporation. DCAP is the first CAR program to combine two critical services for lower-income residents under one program: scrap and replace services in areas lacking pathways to retire high-polluting vehicles, and financing assistance for individuals without a vehicle to scrap, offering them incentives to purchase clean vehicles. Even after getting an incentive, most people need a loan. To support disadvantaged community members in both program pathways, we provide one-on-one financial counseling with HUD-certified counselors, addressing budgeting and credit repair so participants can access loans. After financial counseling, participants receive warm handoffs to one of our six vetted CDFI credit union partners. This means they've been recognized by the U.S. Department of Treasury for serving low-income and disadvantaged communities. These credit unions offer loans at 8% interest or lower for DCAP participants, ensuring affordable financing for clean vehicle purchases. In contrast, other CARB-funded light-duty programs allow loans up to 16% interest, offer no consumer protections, and provide minimal education. Why defund DCAP when it clearly offers comprehensive services community members need and want? An 8% rate is half of 16%. A 16% loan means double the interest. Defunding DCAP will push low-income residents into higher interest loans, increasing their financial burden. Defunding DCAP is a step backward. Let's ensure equitable access to affordable clean vehicle financing for the communities that need it most. Please approve the funding plan as presented by CARB staff. Thank you.
Thank you. Brett Zuner, I've activated your mic. You may begin.
Hello, my name is Brett Zuner, Senior Manager of Environmental Equity at the Foundation for California Community Colleges. The foundation supported numerous projects with the Air Resources Board for nearly 10 years, and including also other programs like Replace Your Ride as a primary contractor for South Coast AQMD. And CARB's resolution today will strengthen the progress made over several years to ensure that everyone does have access to these incentives. But replacing the existing solutions and strategies for addressing program continuity, as proposed in some public comment, just represents an overly complicated and volatile solution and sets a dangerous precedent. Some public comments are proposing changes that are in stark conflict with expectation and norms around program implementation, and stripping communities of funding who have never had access to such a program to give to those who have had access for over a decade does not support equity. And it does remain unclear why some air districts are able to maintain reliable funding while others are not. It may be that those air districts have not fully phased out conventional hybrid vehicles, implemented the needs-based model, and may continue to use a first-come, first-served model, which we know results in a more rapid drawdown. South Coast AQMD has successfully demonstrated an ability to maintain reliable access to funding. And as a contractor for over 10 years, we've seen the improvements they've made, including putting forth local funds to date. If South Coast AQMD can do it, I believe other air districts can too. The proposed changes should not be considered until less dramatic strategies have been attempted by those air districts, because they ignore the reality that DCAP can provide incentives to residents living in a regional DC4A area when their local program funds are exhausted. If the goal is to ensure access to incentives, the solutions proposed here today are unnecessary and harmful. And I would like to see some of those other strategies implemented before such volatile ones are proposed.
Thank you. Kaylin Scott Peoples, I have activated your mic. You may unmute and begin.
Hello, good morning. My name is Kaylin Scott Peoples. I'm the CEO and Executive Director at Neighborhood Housing Services of the Inland Empire, serving Riverside County and San Bernardino County, headquartered in the city of San Bernardino. NHSIE is a contracted service provider for the DCAP program leading the Inland Empire Hub. We were engaged by CHDC because of our unique positioning to access the residents in our region who have been overlooked and underserved. Although NHSIE's primary mission is supporting our clients to access affordable housing through our assortment of services, we believe that the DCAP program is essential to improving the quality of life in the Inland Empire. The Inland Empire has some of the worst air quality in the state and a poor public transportation system. Many low-income families have to commute far distances from home to work due to the cost of living. It is difficult to mobilize without personal transportation. DCAP will bring accessibility to electric vehicle resources to these families who would have otherwise never had the opportunity. This can save them money on the inflated cost of gas and help decrease the contribution to air pollution in the Inland Empire. Investing in community-based organizations like DH, CHDC, excuse me, and NHSIE allows us to work together to provide a viable way of connecting these resources to the greater community. We are urging the board to continue this funding and support the DCAP program. Thank you.
Thank you. We have four more speakers, Fred Soares, Soumya Jain, Nathan Akawa, and Beverly Deschaux. Fred, I have activated your mic. You may unmute and begin.
Hey, good morning. My name is Frederico Soares. I'm the CEO of Elite World Trading, a food distribution company here in Los Angeles. And I've been, you know, listening to all of you, and I've been reading all the new regulations on trucks for California. And that worries me because I've talked to many other food distributors in SoCal, and nobody has the funds to change their fleet into electric. And I believe that the conversion truck versus a buying truck, it's a brand new vehicle. It's impossible for us to buy new vehicles and for most of the distribution companies. And if we can convert and we can have the additional fund to do that, it's the only way for us to survive. Because if you guys don't do that, we're probably going to have to close, or you're probably going to have to choose another state to work in, because it's going to be impossible for us to be here in California. And, you know, it's just sad because there are a lot of food distribution companies here that are not Sysco and American U.S. Foods that will have to close their doors. Thank you.
Thank you. Soumya Jain, I have activated your mic. You may unmute and begin.
You did so good.
Good morning, Chair and board members. Thank you for the opportunity to speak and for your commitment to advancing ZEV equity. My name is Soumya Jain, and I am a small fleet owner based in Southern California representing SBR Express. We are a very proud Californian company, been operating in this space for 15 years, and have dedicated to be providing affordable trucking and fulfillment solutions to communities across California and nationwide. As a small fleet owner, I urge you to expand incentives specifically for the purchase of used conversion trucks in the medium to heavy duty segment. Retrofitting these trucks are far more feasible than spending on new zero emission vehicles, especially for smaller fleets like ours with limited capital expenditure budgets. Higher incentives like proposed, including grants, tax credits, and lower interest financing, will be critical to making these solutions attainable for small businesses like mine. These programs really help us in preserving existing assets and minimizing the costs. And this will not only enable small fleets to maintain the emission standards, but also help California's clean air goals on our behalf. We play a crucial role in local economies, and I urge you to consider the request to maintaining our ability to serve our communities effectively while advancing sustainability. Thank you for your leadership and consideration. I appreciate the opportunity to talk.
Thank you. Nathan Okowa, I've activated your mic. You may unmute and begin. Nathan Okowa? Okay, we'll go ahead and move on to our last commenter, Beverly Deschaux, and we'll come back to you, Nathan. Beverly, I've activated your mic. You may unmute and begin. All right, that concludes our Zoom commenters.
All right, thank you. I will now close the record on this agenda item. Board members, do you have any questions or comments? Board Member De La Torre.
Thank you, Chair. Maybe I'll start with the other stuff and then finish with the more complicated one. First of all, on HVIP, I had a question about application times. I've heard some complaints in this regard, and so if you can just say what is the process, the time frame for someone who gets an HVIP grant, how long does it take?
Thank you, Peter Christensen. Appreciate the question. HVIP has an over 10-year history of being one of the most streamlined incentive programs in our portfolio, and we look forward to continuing that. In terms of the payment for HVIP vouchers, we recognize that that is really important, especially for the dealerships. In a normal HVIP transaction, one that has all the paperwork and all the documentation that's in place, that processing time after the truck is delivered can be in the neighborhood of 6 to 8 weeks, which is a pretty efficient timeline. There are transactions where that timeline...
6 to 8 weeks application to check.
From the truck delivery to the check. In some cases, the truck has to be produced, it has to be built. That timeline is up to the OEM. But once the truck is ready to be delivered and the paperwork is in, that would be 6 to 8 weeks. In cases where that takes longer are usually where there's aspects of the sales transaction that are a little bit outside of the norm. If there are signals that we see that require some additional work, staff will take a closer look at some of those transactions. And usually that means asking questions of the dealerships or in some cases questions with the end user fleet. So that can extend the timeline, but we do recognize that that there's an impact on dealerships because they have to float that cost while the transaction is being finalized. I will say that we've been working very closely with dealerships and OEMs on this issue over the past year. We, along with our administrator, have been working with dealerships. We conducted a dealership listening tour, and that actually helped us to identify a couple of areas where we can shorten the process and streamline while we're still making sure that we're fulfilling all of our oversight responsibilities in the program. So we remain committed to doing that and continuing to work with dealerships and others on that issue.
Thank you. I appreciate the increase in conversions. Somebody mentioned it. I know that some of that work is not that great, but if there are manufacturers, companies that are doing the conversions from an internal combustion engine to a battery electric, or I suppose a hydrogen, if they did it right, a fuel cell. If the work is quality work recognized by the experts, we are the experts, and it has a strong warranty, so that vehicle will be on the road for a significant amount of time, like a new truck. I think they do deserve to have a higher percentage because it is somewhat equivalent to a new truck. Obviously these are small scale, sometimes niche products out there. So we the board constantly hear, oh, there isn't a vehicle for this niche vehicle. Well, if we could start to have some increases in incentives like this, that would incentivize folks to do the handful of vehicles that are sold every year in this niche, that niche, bucket trucks, you know, whatever, street sweepers. These are niche vehicles, and so I think this should help to push those niche markets into zero emission. And so I really appreciate that effort here. And then my last thing for HVIP is a couple months ago I brought up a report that staff did on the ridiculous difference between pricing here and pricing in Europe. And so I hope that in our HVIP discussions with OEMs, this is part of it, because we need to use every lever we can to get parity with the Europeans. And that doesn't mean bringing them up to us. It means us going down to where they are on the pricing. So thank you. I appreciate that. On e-bike, you know, that's, it's been a long time coming. And so I appreciate the data that was on the chart here, that it's launching soon. I got a call from a senator about this, and, you know, folks are anxious. I know this one here is. yes, I hope there's going to be a lot of news about it, a lot of pomp and circumstance when that launches, so that people know it's available and they can do that. Okay, so now the big one, which is DCAP, Clean Cars for All. First of all, I want to be clear. I support DCAP continuing. No one here, I think, wants to get rid of it. But there has been a fundamental change in the United States recently, where we're not going to get any federal money that was going to support some of these transactions. We know, because we saw it in June, that there's no state money for this. And so right now, the only funds that we have are the funds that are sitting there in DCAP. And so I want to go back a couple of years to fall of 2022, where the board, this board, asked staff to, in this measure that we did 2 years ago, to withdraw the statewide Clean Cars for All, DCAP, from the five existing air districts. So this board has already taken a position in terms of the need to have both side by side. Last year, this board took a similar action, which was to approve a staff proposal that funds were fungible between all the programs in this space, so DCAP and the five air districts. And we specifically delegated authority to the executive officer to reallocate funds between DCAP and the district Clean Cars for All programs as needed, so that they were all fluid. This was with the, again, the acknowledgement that these things all need to be side by side. They all need to be running simultaneously. And so we've been clear. This board has been clear for 2 years now about the interaction between the programs. Clean Cars for All was established by SB 459, by Pavley, SB 1275 by De Leon. It was further codified by Cooper's AB 630. And then the most recent measure was SB 1382 by Lena Gonzalez, Senator Gonzalez. All in this space, all making it clear that Clean Cars for All is a thing, and DCAP was something we created, but it's been acknowledged since then. In terms of funding, the money that is sitting there now is over three fiscal years. 21-22, there was $14 million. In 22-23, there was $64 million. These are greenhouse gas reduction funds, cap and trade dollars. 23-24, it was $15 million. And then from the general fund, when there was general fund money, it feels like ages ago, mm-hmm. In 22-23, there was $122 million. The budgets were flush back then. They were trying to put money in as many boxes as possible. Also in 22-23, there was the ZAP. That was $10 million, which was discussed earlier. And then also in 23-24, another $11 million. That's a lot of money that's been put into this program. So it is just getting off the ground, as was said. The map we got had a couple of places, big places that said coming soon. So that's kind of the context. the resolution today, in multiple places, says that the board can delegate or is delegating to the executive officer to allocate a portion of funds that it can allocate, reallocate, redirect, modify, combine, and adjust grant and incentive amounts. And it says that in multiple places in this resolution. It says it can make adjustments, corrections, updates, modifications of the projects in the funding plan. It says another section in section 8, same thing. It also says we're delegating to draft, negotiate, amend, extend, execute, and terminate grant agreements. Again, not saying terminate. It's just in the resolution. It's already authorized by this board in this resolution that was prepared by staff. So it also says down below that the proposed FY 24-25 funding plan with provisions to make modifications where necessary or shift funding as needed. Multiple places throughout the resolution. So it clearly is something this board can take action on. I understand the concern. I got a call from one of the subcontractors about this, and I said, no one is saying we're zeroing this out. It's not being killed. But I think the board has been consistent over several years in wanting to have these be side by side. And so I hope, Chair, that we can have a conversation about that at the end of everyone's comments today. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. I do want to make sure and hear from other board members on this topic, but I did kind of want to level set a little bit and think about some possible next steps. First of all, unfortunately, we are basically talking about scraps, right? I mean, we are talking about inadequate funding for getting vehicles to residents that could not otherwise afford cleaner vehicles. And we have, two mechanisms to do that. We have the district programs. We have DCAP. We are also dealing with some, direction from the legislature that is not necessarily backed up by appropriations or clear in the sense that there is plenty of budget language that basically says, we legislature would like you, CARB, to take this cake of money and magically slice it up into slices that vastly exceed the available resources. So that's the other piece we're dealing with. The next piece we're dealing with is the process of implementing programs. The process of implementing programs is you are allocated funds, those funds are appropriated. You need to encumber those funds in a timely manner so you do not lose those funds. Then you also need the administrators to know what they're working with, what they're dealing with, and they bid for these programs and implement these programs based on the budget that is provided to them. We are also dealing with programs that are well established in the districts that have functioned well over time, while we are also trying to stand up programs that reach residents that have not had this opportunity before. CVRP for many years was not oriented towards lower income residents. It is now no longer a program. And so we have a situation now where the only incentives for light duty vehicles are the ones in the district programs, which leaves many, many residents unable to access any kind of vehicle incentives oriented to low-income residents. So I just want to make sure we all understand sort of the reality that we're dealing with. So as we're thinking about those competing interests, I also want to note, you know, we've heard a lot of public comment saying, well, we should use the allocation that is agreed to for future funds between the districts and CARB, the allocations between the statewide program and the district programs. The problem with that is that the DCAP portion of that is very, very small, and the contractor has an existing agreement, and there are funds encumbered that we cannot revert back without losing those funds that exceed the DCAP portion of the future funding. In other words, the future funding allocation for DCAP is so small that we would, if we were to use that funding allocation, then it would be impossible for the contractor to fulfill the agreement, for us to be able to use encumbered funds, and for the program to get off the ground. That said, it is also true that there are funds that could potentially be adjusted. And I also want to note briefly that staff did follow the board's direction this summer when it allocated additional funds to the San Joaquin program, as was noted in the staff report. So I just really want to be clear that they did follow our instructions. And so we are now in this incredibly difficult position of trying to figure out, as the districts continue to use their funds, draw down their funds, as DCAP continues to get off the ground, are there any more opportunities to allocate portions of the DCAP funds to districts' programs? And honestly, I don't think that we have a clear answer to that quite yet. We know that the future funding allocation would not be consistent with the funds that have been encumbered, but we also know that there are future funds that DCAP is using that are part of the overall allocated budget for that program that could potentially, because they are funds that could potentially be allocated, that, you know, we could have that conversation to see if there are portions that we might be able to provide to the districts if they run out of funds. The last thing I will note is we absolutely need to, at all levels and for all programs, we need to be requesting more funds. And I'm a little less pessimistic than my colleagues as to whether or not there is an opportunity for future funds. And fortunately, because of the hard work of staff and representatives from the districts, we have an idea of how any future funds would be allocated. So my suggestion, and I'm interested to hear from my colleagues, I think it would be worth spending some more time picking apart the different budget allocations and how they are structured, recognizing that the large ask that some advocates have made, that we use the funding allocation for future funding opportunities, is not really feasible. Trying to see if there are some smaller buckets that we can think about as a potential way to modify the allocations for DCAP to be available to the districts. And to your point, Board Member De La Torre, the, you know, the, I think the resolution as drafted provides that flexibility. And I think what I'm hearing from you is, you know, you would like to make sure that there is more engagement as part of that. And I can commit to working with staff and reporting back. And if we cannot come up with a possible allocation, you know, it can come back to the board. But I do think that there is an opportunity to, you know, to roll up our sleeves and think about some potential flexibilities. All that said, I am now interested to hear what my colleagues have to say. Dr. Shaheen, you have your microphone up. Oh, okay. I wasn't looking. Was it Board Member Guerra?
Sure.
Okay.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate that, and I'll go to those points at the end of my conversation here. I guess I you must have looked in my notes here, or but I'm going to go through HVIP e-bike, and then this last conversation on clean cars for all and decap afterwards. But first, let me start with HVIP here. You know, one. And first to say, like, I appreciate the presentation. I mentioned to staff when I got my briefing, I think, you know, for this is my second budget funding cycle. It always surprises me and impresses me how much we're actually doing. And that can't be lost in this conversation. I think it was one of the final points, how much we're actually moving the needle forward on every single aspect of the ways from heavy duty down to bicycles, okay? I mean, in every single aspect of being able to try to improve our air quality. So I want to thank the staff for that, and thank you, Stephanie, for an amazing presentation, because I think that makes it easy for anybody watching at home to understand. On the HVIP side, first, I want to thank Board Member De La Torre for his comments during our last budget hearing on our last hearing that's led to some of the questions on CVRP. I also want to highlight, and I'm concerned about the voucher time distribution. And we have to do our due diligence to make sure that every voucher that we are releasing, we're checking all the quality assurance pieces of it, that they're actually going. But there were many times I've heard, particularly on the hydrogen vehicle side, that purchasers were willing to give up because of the delay time and the insecurity of when that voucher was coming. So when we're trying to get this market moving forward, particularly on the heavy-duty vehicle side, and that's the heavy-duty vehicle side is the area that's impacting the air quality the most in the Sacramento region. So I want to make sure that we're moving forward that. I was very pleased to hear the conversations of how staff is working on how to improve the distribution of those vouchers forward, and I hope to get more information on that. On the electric retrofit side as well, you know, we inspired about the opportunity to look at that. I represent the industrial area of our city here, and actually the region's largest industrial area. And knowing these vehicles, sometimes the chassis and the equipment on the chassis are actually going to be worth more than the motor. And so getting this market moving forward, I think, is going to help not only that, but even in our industrial area, we have a high school that is training kids in South Sac how to do electric retrofit, and I brought this up before. So it brings me to, you know, an idea that that I want to throw out there. You know, we have been using HVIP very successfully to electrify our electric bus fleets, and I'm very proud of that. Proud about Twin Rivers Unified School District and its leadership and the support that CARB has done to move in that forward. But here's where I want to link that support and the electric retrofit support. I would like to see in the future, and I don't know if it's through the CEC, and I'm glad they were here today, or through CARB, how a school that gets HVIP support for their electric bus retrofits, I mean electric bus replacement, also can get some level of support for starting or creating these capstone program in their shop classes to teach electric retrofit. You know, I learned how to pull an engine out and do that work when I was in shop, but it was an ag related. I mean, why wouldn't we be training, you know, folks in an ag setting, an off-road setting, how to do electrofits? I know that's not part of this item, but I want to figure out how, as students are seeing the HVIP program success of getting those old diesel buses, them to be able to be linked and saying, hey, I can learn to work on this and have a career in this field. So that's just a little, you know, throw a point to spark ideas on how to move that forward. Very supportive of the moving to 70% on HVIP for EV retrofit, and also on the forklift side to being able to move that. I visited one agricultural facility. Their entire facility was propane forklifts, and they were going to have to move completely over and into that. And I think this is going to help that agricultural committee facility move forward quickly. On the e-bike voucher program, let me move to that there. I can't say how you know, just frustrated I've been. And, you know, thank you, Lisa, for your time to sit down with our community partners, our leaders, our housing authority and housing, multifamily housing advocates who already service the community that's eligible at that income level. And they're the folks who may not even be eligible for a loan, let alone a low-interest loan. And this would the e-bike voucher opportunity actually gives people a true, reliable way to address that first mile, last mile in the gaps of our public transit system. So, but I have been frustrated in the rollout, and it's only a small program. It's a $21 million program, and I do think that has brought concern, and I appreciate the work that's been done to finally get it going. But you know, I know Board Member De La Torre has heard me vent quite far much about that, so I'm excited about that moving forward. But it brings me to my concern with the $250 million contracts for DCAP. And if we're having a difficult time managing the $21 million contract, I'm concerned about how we're going to run a $250 million statewide contract or contracts for that. And maybe this is more of a process question because I wasn't here in 2022. But, you know, as a council member, you know, we, in our city at least, in many cities and other boards, set thresholds of when something has to come to the board before contracts are actually authorized or approved. And I'm actually kind of a little concerned that $250 million worth of contracts were approved or authorized, and then we're coming back here on the funding side. So to me, that sounds a little backwards. And I get that, you know, you don't want to all of a sudden have such a low threshold that everything's on consent, and then what does it really matter, the purview? But to me, that just is a process standpoint for this board. So I would in the future like to have a conversation about, you know, how we actually not get into this position where you have opposing opinions from the board and staff has already executed contracts. And the board does have, in my opinion, after listening to the conversation here and looking at this, have the authority to adjust and amend any existing contracts. And now let me bring this point to the how I feel about Clean Cars for All. I'm very excited about the success of this program. It's probably, in Sacramento, one of our most successful programs. And I do remember our first launch of this program and speaking to one of the parents, single parent with two kids, who had an unreliable car, and talking about the experience of when that car broke down and figuring out what to do and how they were going to get to school. And so while many folks talk about just the air quality piece of it, this is bringing reliability to low-income families. And I've seen that success happen at the local level, at the air district level. And so we're in a federal non-attainment zone. And I think that the air districts that have been doing this work are working in the cities that not statewide but nationally are the most polluted, at least by the American Lung Association. The air districts that are serving these areas, it's the most polluted and facing those impacts. So to me, you know, this is where I feel like, having watched over the last 6 years, I think, or 7 years of that program, at the local level, I have a different opinion on how DCAP has come about and how we're expanding service that is successful and efficient. And in a time of austerity, in a time with very little resources, we need to be using the best and possible way to execute the most number of clean vehicles, serving the most families at the lowest possible cost. And this program, Clean Cars for All, is so hands-on. And maybe this is the difference between our air quality leaders at the state level and at CARB, and our air quality leaders at the local level. I relate it to, if you're ever in sales, it's wholesale versus retail. You know, wholesale air quality versus retail air quality. And at the retail level, you got to work one-on-one. And the reason why these programs have been successful is because of the one-on-one work that the air district staff does with the individual. I have a big concern that at the wholesale level, you're going to do that one-on-one. We're going to be able to achieve that one-on-one that has shown the success by the air district. So to me, I've got a lot of hesitation with such a big chunk of money for a statewide program in that effort. So bottom line, I think, you know, what has been said is maintaining continuous funding for the programs that have shown that our existing success to execute those funds should be our number one priority, given the fact that we have no certainty of future funding. We know that we will get more low-income families, more families in federal non-attainment polluted cities moving forward if we focus on that. And it's intentional about its approach. Finally, I'll just say that I appreciate your recommendation, Chair, but I have a much more stronger point of view. I think that giving the air districts that have proven successful programs more funding to help and grow outwards is a much more better approach. And I'll give you the example here in Sacramento. We already do this in other programs, like in HVIP. West Sacramento residents breathe the same air just over the river here, a few blocks away from us, that we do. But they are not eligible for this program. The families in Broderick who are low income, communities of color, some farm working, can't apply for this program. But the Sacramento Air District could be able to support that if we would fund the air districts to expand that way, where they already know what's been working and they know how to reach ag communities in the county on the south area, and we can actually help support them. It requires more staff assistance and the ability to expand that way. In HVIP, Sacramento was able to help Yolo Solano and the cities of Vacaville, with the smaller air districts that have less staff support, to be able to execute a bigger electric bus program. We were able to get the Solano County buses when we got the Twin Rivers buses in Sacramento. So there's already ways that we're using more efficient ways rather than creating another statewide program. So I will put that as a thought process on this, because I do think that San Joaquin could help its neighboring counties much better, since they know and seen when we've had failures and successes. I do think San Diego could help its neighboring counties much better than having another statewide program that overlaps. And I would feel terrible if I told one of my constituents to say, hey, we're out of, because we might end up out of money in August or September in Sacramento, to say, can't come to us, but you can go to the statewide program that you're going to be competing to everybody else, when we know we've been successful. So in that one, very, very, very passionate about how well this program has worked. That's the exciting part. And very, frustrated that it is, as the chair mentioned, it's scraps. It's such a small amount of money. And when we see success, we should be funding that success. So thank you, Chair. And those are my, at least, thoughts on how maybe we could move forward.
All right, thank you. I do want to give staff an opportunity to respond to a couple of the questions you mentioned, but I will note that the legislature specifically said, you know, specifically allocated money to the statewide program. It's not like we just decided, oh, let's do a statewide program. So I do think we need to be cognizant of the legislative direction that we have. All right.
Chair, do you mind if I respond to that? I do agree. But in the statute and in the trailer bill, it doesn't say DCAP. It just says statewide program. And I think it's the purview of this board to identify how we execute a statewide program. At least in the information that the CARB staff sent me and on the trailer bill language, that's what it said. So, but that would be my approach. And I get it. The DCAP has been moving, but we're not going to, you know, eliminate a program.
Which we have done. We have created a statewide program. I'm going to turn it to our executive officer.
Thanks. Actually, I'm going to ask Lisa McCumber to respond to a few of the points on the contracting piece, especially.
Hi, thanks, Lisa McCumber. To comment on a couple of the concerns that you raised. First, comparing our small e-bike program and administrator we selected for that project with the administrator that we selected for the Driving Clean Assistance Project. The amount of funding that we received for the e-bike program was initially very small, $10 million. And at the time that we ran the solicitation for that grant, we had a lot of community activists telling us, you always get into grant with the same people. You need to broaden out and consider folks and communities that can help to run these projects. And lo and behold, we had a scoring application from somebody we'd never worked with before, and we are about ready to get that program launched, and we are really excited about that. But when you do work with new folks, it does take a little extra time. There's a lot of learning. There's a big learning curve for them to understand how the state works and what our expectations are and to be able to meet those expectations. That said, on the flip side with the Driving Clean Assistance Program, we've actually worked with the Community Housing Development Corporation for almost a decade. We ran a small-scale pilot with them in Richmond, in the Bay Area, where they moved through several million dollars to help get folks into zero-emission vehicles and work on financing. That project, that pilot, we've taken all of our learnings from and really used that to help guide how we designed the Driving Clean Assistance Program and how we plan to implement it. And so they come with lots of experience and lots of trusted experience with communities, with banks, and with success of the programs. And we felt at the staff level very confident that they could handle the amount of funding that we put into that grant initially. And then further, I think on the second concern of one-on-one, again, learning from the lessons that we built within this project, the Community Housing and Development Corporation works one-on-one. That is their core mission, is to help consumers to get into homes, to help consumers have a better life. They work, majority of the folks that we have that go through that program are of the lowest income group. They are minority. They are folks that have not been able to get a chance elsewhere. This entity is by far one of the most well-suited to be able to speak to those other communities throughout the state of California that have not had an opportunity to participate. They have built strong partnerships with almost a dozen CBOs, and within those CBOs, even more, because we've got lots of networks kind of built throughout the state. The one-on-one, we absolutely believe that we will be able to scale and offer through this program and make it very successful for low-income consumers to compete and get access to the dollars that they've never had before and that they would never have been able to achieve through the broader ZEV advancing programs like CVRP.
All right, thank you. Dr. Shaheen.
Thank you, Chair. All right. Well, I've spent quite a bit of time looking at this issue, and I appreciate all the time of staff and stakeholders to help educate me more on this issue. First thing I'd like to start with is just celebrating all of the accomplishments. All right, slide 6,
clearly demonstrates $6 billion has been awarded for clean transportation incentives, 60% of that going to low-income groups. I noted, Stephanie, during your presentation that you said that many of the programs funneling into this analysis were actually not initially directed or intended to go to equity. So it looks like as we continue to emphasize equity as a priority, that's showing up in our outcomes. So I just wanted to take a moment. I know this is a tough conversation when we have limited funds and lots of needs. I'd also like to take an opportunity to uplift us all, right? Is what I've learned is we've learned a lot. We've got people working very hard to get people into cars, the most deserving to get them into cars in San Joaquin and in the South Coast. I like to celebrate those types of accomplishments, and in the outreach and engagement activities that were outlined in slide 9, just really want us to think about building communities of practice and yielding more repeatable, scalable models. Now, I know during our staff briefing we talked about the difference between a large-scale, repeatable model for the entire state, and that's something that is more customized to the regions is probably even more effective. And I actually really agree with that. But I just wanted to, again, start by uplifting us. This is a difficult conversation. I'm supportive of the HVIP proposal. Peter, I mentioned to you as well when we spoke, accelerating this, I know you've run into a few issues that explain some of the delays, but expediting it, great. Before I get to decap, I wanted to talk a little bit about e-bikes. So I've been a fan of e-bikes for a really long time, and I actually have a scar on my chin from an e-bike. So, yeah, they're pretty powerful, particularly before the pedal acts, right? Oh, you're feeling for me, Dr. Balms? Good. Okay, so my question's about safety. So are we involving our bike advocates and bike community and training and safety? I know, Lisa, you're really excited about the launch of this program, but I'm really concerned about people's safety and the use of these devices on our roads and just for people that are unfamiliar with them. Throttle bikes are pretty darn powerful. So I'd love to hear on that first.
Yes, Lisa McCumber. Yes, absolutely. Safety has been a big concern of ours from the beginning as well. We built into the program the basics. You know, consumers can get a helmet, they can get safety equipment when they get the bike through the program, but education is really important. And so they do have, as part of the application process, a safety component in which they do have to, you know, there are some videos, there's some education. And then in working with our community-based organizations that are out in the field with consumers, a lot of the different models do incorporate things like how to ride the bike safely, how to understand what the bike laws are in their areas, and things like that. So we are, education outreach is a huge component of the program.
Thank you very much. That makes me so happy to hear, because you can get injured on these. I know that for a fact. Okay, so decap, right? I've been really, really trying to understand the economics and the funding over three different fiscal periods. I mean, ultimately, what concerns me, and I don't know how we sort through this, but, you know, what happens when one of our regional Clean Cars for All programs runs out of funds? And sadly, Lisa, you shared with me that could be quite soon. And I wondered how that all squares with the CAPCOA formula and the 9% distribution going to the statewide program. How would that work if we're using the CAPCOA formula?
So the formula that we've proposed in the staff report, again, would cover future years. And one component of what went into that was looking at past performance and where the projects are. And so, yeah, the 91% of the funds are allocated in the future for district programs, 9% for statewide. But one of the things we would still have to look at each year is what do the programs need? We could see that there is greater need somewhere and need to make some type of an adjustment, and we would work with the air districts and CAPCOA to do that. But we want to make sure that we had a foundation so that when the legislature passes a budget, we could move swiftly to start getting money out to districts. Without something like that in place, we have to wait till we bring you a formal plan the following November, and that could be a very large gap in time that could keep a program non-operational. One of the other things, though, to consider in this discussion around the regional programs and the state programs is what funding is out there altogether. And so while there is funding that's within the Driving Clean Assistance Program for both the car scrap and for financing, the districts do have access to a lot of other funds as well. We have the Community Air Protection Program, in which districts could access those dollars to help support Clean Cars for All projects. They do have their district AB 923 dollars, which is a $2 motor vehicle fee that's assessed, that they decide how that spend in car scrap and replace is something that they could use those dollars for. So there are several different mechanisms that we could consider. And so to the chair's point, I think really looking across all of the different considerations that are on the table to find the best way to make sure that the projects that have been running have the capability to stay running. We certainly don't want to see any program close. I suffered this for decades running the Clean Vehicle Rebate Project, right? That program start and stopped over and over, and it's very, very challenging, not just on the administrators, but on the consumers. It's very confusing. It's very challenging. And so we don't want that for any project. But we certainly want to make sure that we're doing whatever we're doing in a really thoughtful way.
Thank you. It seems like we really need to all lean in, all work together at this time of need, and come up with creative solutions. Just two more points. I really appreciated the staff briefing, but also Virgil Looney, who spoke from the Community Housing Development Corporation. He was online. He talked about all of the efforts that are being set up or have already been set up with the community credit unions to ensure that we are not looking at predatory loans, that there's a loan loss reserve program, and I think deep expertise in financial counseling. I think this is a lesson learned from some of the other districts, right? So can you just confirm, Lisa, that is the case?
So the what we're doing in the financing mostly is lessons learned from our pilot that we ran with the Community Housing Development Corporation over the last several years. So in the pilot that we ran for financing assistance, it was specifically focused on financing assistance. We offered down payments for clean vehicles and really worked to get them into loans. The loan cap for that program was 8%. But the loan average typically was at 5%. So most low-income consumers coming into that program were getting right around a 5% loan. We took our learnings in how we developed those partnerships and working with CDFI-type banks, and that is what we are. That's what we're doing in the new statewide program, is really expanding upon those lessons learned. And so we've seen a lot of success in that particular space. One other point that I should have mentioned with your last question as well is, with the statewide program being open at the beginning of the year, throughout the entire state, any consumer throughout the state will be able to apply to that program. And any subcontractors that are working right now through a district program, should a district program need to close and we be in a situation of not finding additional funding, they can work through the statewide program. So we are very cognizant that need is there. That is something that could be accommodated through the statewide program as well.
In terms of the DCAP guidelines, should I be concerned at all about a needs-based approach potentially slowing down application processes and potentially opening up opportunities for people who are less in need getting higher priority?
I don't believe so, and that's the reason why we're trying out this needs-based approach. We've heard, again, years and years, and you all have heard this from commenters over the years, that the first-come, first-serve approach to just taking in an application and processing that first does not work from an equity standpoint. And so what we're trying to do with the needs-based approach is really rank the applications based off of stated need, but then everything I've learned having a teenager, you trust and then verify. So we're trusting that the application meets it, but we're verifying that it does as well. And those applicants that can verify that their income is in fact of the lowest income, we're moving them to the front of the line. We're setting them up right away with a case manager. Those case managers handhold that one-on-one all the way through the process. So we aren't just giving them information and then telling them to go figure it out. We are helping them through the process. We're working, one of the partners, the Foundation for Community Colleges, has an extensive kind of phone bank set up. So we've got people there all the time to answer questions when it's convenient for consumers. And so we're taking just this very different approach this time to making sure that folks are available. We really are reaching those that are lower income, that they aren't having to wait. They're getting through that process. We have a goal of getting to about a 30-day time frame for a consumer to be able to get in, get through all their financial education, and be able to go out and start shopping for their car. It's going to take us a little while to hit that mark, but that is our goal.
Wonderful. And then one last bit here is, you know, I'm always very excited about data and tools and metrics, and I really appreciate the data dashboards that your group has put up. I'd be really delighted to see, in addition to the statewide data and metrics, that we could add the regional Clean Cares for All programs. And I don't know if you could speak to that, Lisa. Is that something that we can make happen?
Yes. In fact, I believe that we do have some district programs data built into the dashboard right now. And so we are working with them to make sure that we are getting consistent data and that all of that can fold in.
Wonderful. Thank you so much.
Board Member Rechtschaffen.
Thank you. I'm going to follow Dr. Shaheen's precedent and focus on the positive of our clean energy programs. And I just want to give one anecdote. Yesterday, I had the privilege of helping to launch a program funded by our Sustainable Transportation Equity Program, STEP. We're helping to fund a new community shuttle in Bayview Hunters Point in San Francisco. And it was a wonderful event. There were dozens of community members and multiple community organizations that participated in formulating the project, and it's really going to make a dramatic difference in providing a clean, very affordable, and zero-emitting option to connecting people who live in Bayview with to BART, to Caltrain, to medical offices, to jobs, to other opportunities. And one of your colleagues, Pedro Peterson, was there, and he and I were treated like celebrities. It was a very I'm always treated like a celebrity, but anyway, it was a very festive atmosphere, and there's a tremendous amount of gratitude to CARB for funding that program. So that's a really positive anecdote. I completely agree with Chair Randolph that we're dealing with scraps, and there's an urgent need for continuous, robust funding of these programs. It seems like we've been doing the pleading since the Clean Vehicle Rebate Program was first adopted over a decade ago, and I think Lisa's quite right that the boom and bust cycle of funding opportunities and incentives is very problematic to growing the market. Chair Randolph, I have a couple of quick questions about your suggested path forward. Do you envision that this would apply for the next year or two until we get additional funding for the programs?
I think we should be thinking about it first of all, we do redo the funding plan every year. And also, of course, there's a new budget every year, right? So we will know as budget proposals are made and the May revise and everything, I mean, we'll have a sense of whether or not we're looking at any opportunities for funding. So I'm thinking of it as a this year thing. And I also think, and this is something, you know, in these conversations we can figure out if there are proposals for new funding, and some of the DCAP funds are reallocated to the extent possible, you know, can those be allocated back if there's enough funding? And so, you know, I think that there are, you know, we would have to sort of see how the budget goes, and then, you know, staff can always report back to the board, updating, you know, how things are moving along.
So it's a makeshift for now until we figure things out. And
yes,
you anticipated the second question I had. is staff going to report back to the board? Are you going to report back to the board on how those discussions go?
Yeah, absolutely. I think I would envision reporting back in writing and then making that information available on the website, unless we need further board guidance, in which case it could come back as an agenda item.
Well, I support the suggested path forward that you've outlined. And I want to echo what has been said by a couple of my colleagues. The local air district programs have been uniquely successful in reaching very hard to access populations in a way that many of our other programs, unfortunately, haven't been. And I think Board Member Guerra talked eloquently about what's happened in Sacramento, in the San Joaquin Valley. We have a similar experience of uniquely successful programs. And we want to make sure that there's a continuous source of funding for those programs, because they really are making a difference in people's lives. I also think the statewide program is important. I think the financing piece is innovative and very important, since we know most people, the great majority of people, and certainly very low-income people, finance their vehicles. They need sources of low-cost financing. And I also agree with what Lisa said about first come, first serve doesn't always work with equity populations. The money's gone too quickly, and the most resourceful people get it. So I'm supportive of these ongoing discussions to make sure to see if funds can be reallocated while maintaining fidelity to what the legislature's ordered us to do. The impossible, follow their directions without enough money to do it, but we'll do our best. So thank you for that compromise, Chair Randolph.
Board Member Takvorian.
Thank you, Chair. And thanks to all of my colleagues for their comments. I wanted to appreciate the staff for the exceptional work that you've done yet again this year. I really appreciate it, and I know that this has been a very challenging year, as we've heard from you and we're hearing from speakers as well as the board members. It's really concerning with such a deep and significant reduction in funding that we may not be able to continue all of the programs that we have started, and that's going to be certainly challenging for our ability to meet our statewide goals. But I appreciate and support the chair's recommendation for us to dig around a little bit. As a nonprofit director for many years, I understand that concept pretty well, and can help to look under some rocks as needed. But I also, as a nonprofit administrator, understand the continuity that's needed for our contractors and for the folks that are trying to deliver these important services. It wasn't that many years ago that we really weren't integrating in equity. It wasn't that many years ago that we weren't really taking it as seriously as clearly the programs that you've described today are taking it. And Lisa, I really want to say that I appreciate your description of Community Housing Development Corporation and the holistic manner in which they're delivering these services. I think that's really, really critical. And with all due respect to districts, because I'm not sure that they have that capacity to really look at a family's full financial profile and full circumstance in life. And I think that's a unique kind of service that we need to really support. And I just want to say how much I appreciate the fact that you're being so thoughtful about that being the right kind of contractor that should be executing this work for us. I think that's our best representation in our community. So huge gratitude for that. And whatever we can do to continue those programs in that holistic way, I think are really important. One question I guess I have, and then a couple of other comments, is in the circumstance where a district may not have that expertise, are they able to access assistance from the state program?
Absolutely.
Okay, so we want to encourage them when they may not be able to do that. Because while I have lots of positive anecdotes, there are some where community members that I know that we've encouraged have not felt that there was an understanding. Certainly there was support from the district, but maybe not an understanding of how to look at the finances. And so I think we just all need to work together a little bit more to make sure that happens. I do think that the needs-based approach, which again we've transitioned to, is critically important. And in my mind, that's the equity approach. A first come, first serve, whether it's for light duty or medium and heavy duty, I think is really critical, because we know that some organizations and corporations really have great systems, and they're, you know, they got somebody that's there making the call as soon as the program opens, and that leaves out folks that need to be educated about it. So I think that's the right approach, and we're modeling that, I think, for others. I do want to just spread this, you know, look a little bit more broadly and say, I think that the HFIT program really fulfills the priorities of some of the 617 programs, many of the 617 programs. And I don't think we should lose sight of the fact that those goals are getting fulfilled as we're executing this program. But these really integrate as well. And then the last thing I just want to ask about is, you know, I agree with Board Member Guerra and De La Torre that we're really waiting on and want this e-bike program to be very successful and safe. And I'm not getting on an e-bike, but but many people should. But I think one of the things we talked about a lot last year was really how we are reducing VMT and how these programs are helping us do that. And frankly, I don't feel like there's much there at this point for VMT reduction. So my question is, in a more holistic way, is it possible for the consultation that families get in regards to potentially purchasing vehicles, can they also get consultation in regards to the incentives and opportunities that are available for them to take transit or other alternative transportation? And I hadn't heard, if I missed it, I apologize, but I hadn't heard that level of integration.
Yeah, really great question there. So as part of Clean Cars for All as a whole, one of the options for a consumer is, instead of getting a new vehicle, they can use alternative transportation instead. And so, yes, those types of services to help them understand how they can move about if they don't want to replace the vehicle are baked into all the programs, regional and statewide.
I guess what I'm looking for, thank you, is a more proactive way to say, so let's think about whether or not buying a new car is your best pathway, or whether transit may be a good pathway. And we can learn more, to Dr. Shaheen's point of, yeah, I'd love to take transit. However, you know, this is the 2 hours it's going to take me to get to work with my children and groceries and all of that. So we're facing the real world dilemmas, but also helping to solve them.
Yes, absolutely.
Dr. Balms.
I will make my comments brief. I've enjoyed listening to my fellow board members and agree with much of what they've said. I especially feel that this discussion has shown both the value of the local programs and of the state program. And I think we do have to do both. And I think, Lisa, you and your staff have done a good job of trying to balance the legislative requirements for the statewide program with continuing to fund, you know, local programs. I don't think we can do much better with the scraps that are currently available. I guess the only thing I would say, well, two things. One is, when I ride my mechanical bike up the hills in Berkeley where I live, the e-bikes go really fast past me, and I, with a little kid on the back, and I worry about the safety. So I think that's a real issue. Seriously, I think hearing this discussion, that we really need to get a report back, you know, sooner than the annual report that we always get. So I just would, and I think in writing probably isn't good enough right now. I think that, from what I hear, it would be good to have something, you know, at a board hearing. in terms of reporting how the how things are going in this year of scraps. Thank you.
Dr. Pacheco Werner.
Thank you so much. And, you know, I really want to start by thanking all the staff for thinking through very thoughtfully all the programs and how to best improve them over time. And that you were responsive as you were framing the DCAP program to be more, you know, to stretch our imagination in terms of what it means to do outreach with equity in mind. And I hope all of the programs, whether statewide or district, continue to do that, particularly those communities that we receive feedback from that need to be served more, such as the African American and tribal communities. So I think that we need to remember that aspect as well. I think in terms of the, I have a couple of questions. So in the San Joaquin Valley, you know, we cannot take new applications starting about mid-December. So that doesn't mean that we'll disperse all the money, but no new applications because we will have no more. We have enough applications for the funding that we have. So when I look at the DCAP website, I see that in the San Joaquin Valley, a program will start running Q1. But for residents who message me, which they often do on social media asking about this program, I usually send them a cell phone number of somebody because that's how the local program goes. They can text Veronica, and that's how that's like the level of outreach where it's at, right? And so I know that Veronica will pick up and call back. And so for me, what is the expectation when we say Q1 on the website? For residents that message me, will there be someone to refer them to in January 1 or March 31?
So that's a great question. And there's, I think, a few different nuances to that. So one, I think that we've got a little bit more time in the Valley program beyond.
I just spoke to the executive officer. They do not.
Okay. Well, thank you for that. That's that we're going to need to follow up with staff because I think that's a little bit different information than I have. That said, however, though, the statewide program, while it won't be fully open, the call center is open. There is information available. And so you could refer them to be able to ask questions and get set up. They could start getting set up and getting ready to apply so that when it opens, when the program does open up for the districts to be able to access, they'll be able to do that. I can't speak to a particular day. I can check with the team and see if we have a day slated for when it will open up for those regions. But I believe it's just early January. Our trend so far has been like around the 10th of each month is when each of the new regions have kicked off.
Yeah. And my concern with that is that, you know, for me, there is no wait and see in terms of the local program. They let staff go, right? And staff that have a lot of expertise. So when we're talking about funding and when it'll come, if it'll come, some of these district programs can't have people just like wait around. And so we have to think about the institutional local expertise that's on the line here as well. So time is very much of the essence here. And so there was also in the past comments, there was also a mention about how some of the future funding allocation has already been spent and that being part of the issue. Can you please give me a dollar amount and what that money has been spent on? Thank you.
Just for clarification, a dollar amount for...
There was a mention, the chair mentioned about the future funding allocation for the future years, that that money has already been spent. Is that correct? And
I think you're asking about to what extent are there fund, and not necessarily not future funds.
No, funds that were reserved.
Yeah, I mean,
years.
Funds like 22. Yes, the yes. Encumbered funds versus not encumbered funds. I think what you're asking is what's been encumbered and what has not been encumbered.
Yeah, if you can give me an actual dollar amount and what that's been spent on. Thank you.
I was just going to say all of the money has been encumbered. There's no bank at the state of California in which there's just a pot of money sitting there waiting. All of that money is under grant agreement or been allocated to districts.
Okay. And so what is it being spent on as we speak?
So as we speak, each of the programs are processing applications and getting dollars out the door to help help consumers get into the vehicles. So they're all being used for their purposes within the projects. I think some of the confusion here, I think, may lie in a lot of the terminology that we use kind of in the budget space. So all of the dollars are encumbered. They're all committed under grant. That doesn't mean every dollar's gone out the door to a consumer yet, right? Some of the dollars are kind of impending and waiting to go be fed out for their purpose within each of the programs. Actual dollar amounts for the grants, I don't have the dollar amounts for each of the grants with me. But I can tell you what remains for each of them. Within the statewide program, what remains right now is $198 million. Within each of the districts, there's a total of $99 million for the suite of the entire. Would you like a breakdown for each of the districts as well? No? Okay.
Can I just note, you know, it's important to note that when staff moved the $14 million to San Joaquin, they did have to go in and revise the grant agreement. So, right. So that's, you know, that's staff's point that, you know, those funds are under agreement. And some of those funds, and if the agreement were to go away, that would be a problem. Because then the funds would revert back, and we would have to go through a whole process, and we would not necessarily get that money back. No. So I think it's important to recognize that, you know, this is not a simple, oh, we're just going to move this pot of money over there. But right. I do think it is worth taking some time to see if there are options, to be clear, kind of around the edges. I mean, like I was saying before, you know, there is no way we get anywhere near the proposed allocation for the for future funds. That's not a thing. Right. Yeah. But the question is, you know, are there some modifications we could make temporarily to help some of the district programs stay alive?
Yeah. So I think, you know, I really want to make sure that it's clear that I support the chair's direction, and I also note that for me, time is really of the essence here in terms of the institutional expertise that we have at our local levels already, and I also know some of these nonprofits, and I know that they're outstanding. In what they do. I have not seen them in this space, so I can't speak to this space. And I know that there's, you know, they're outstanding in what they do. And I know that you have been very intentional in trying to do, as I mentioned before, being responsive to doing some of that outreach to populations that have not always been served at the proportion as we would strive for them to be served. So I commend you in that, and I really want to make sure that we set up everybody to be successful with the understanding that even though, you know, I mean, I acknowledge that, you know, everybody has used the term, you know, scraps. And for me, in the Valley, we're scrappy. So it's a lot of money. For me, when I see that amount, it's a lot of money. And I expect a lot of cars out the door with that money and not a lot of overhead, because that's what I expect, a scrappy program. Thank you.
Board Member Hurt.
Yes, Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Dr. Pacheco-Warner, for that scrappy comment. I'm there with you 100%. We need to be lean and mean and get as much of this money out, you know, if we're going to achieve our climate goals and really improve public health and the quality of life for Californians all over. And when I think about this program, I think a lot about making active transportation really a viable and competitive option for those in need, that we accelerate the transition of light, medium, and heavy duty vehicles to cleaner alternatives as quickly as possible, and that we advance incentive equity in the most impacted communities, and doing our best to eliminate roadblocks, expedite the availability of clean, convenient, and equitable transportation for all Californians. And it's my opinion that this plan is a critical step in advancing those objectives. And I want to thank the staff for their ongoing efforts. It seems every time this has come to the board, we've continuously improved the funding strategy. We've learned from the past experiences. And while it's not perfection, it sure is going in the right direction. And so I just want to appreciate the staff and also celebrate the work that we've done so far. I also want to appreciate the staff for being responsive to my support for a needs-based approach. I absolutely think it's more equitable than a first-come, first-served model in the Bay Area. We've already seen the positive impacts of that sort of shift in communities. I think in line with the chair's remarks, you know, at the start of this discussion, we absolutely have to acknowledge that the available funding is still insufficient to meet all the needs. And so we're allocating these resources wisely, strategically, and this is challenging. But this plan is really designed to make the most of the resources we have to drive us towards our goals. So again, I think this is a celebration, as someone said earlier, and there's always more work to do. And I'd say there are also a lot of moving parts and programs. So I'm going to be looking for in the future, you know, how you're going to ensure accountability, and whether what we intend to do is actually happening, just how we're going to prove out all this work and how monies are getting or not getting to the folks that need it the most. I think that's really going to be important to this discussion of, you know, with each iteration, we're improving the plan. And so getting that information and data and learning from the past, I think, is going to be really essential to also, to someone else's point earlier about building trust and that we really are doing all that we can. I want to thank those who've reached out, the public, the workshop participants. And again, I want to thank the staff for their continued work in shaping this plan. And those are my comments. I look forward to supporting this.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions or comments? Is there a motion to approve the funding plan?
So moved.
I move approval.
Okay, we are back on the webcast. We apologize. We had a medical emergency here in the room. The individual is fine, so the emergency has been resolved, so we can move forward with the meeting. Dr. Balmes had just made a motion to adopt the resolution.
Madam Chair.
And Board Member De La Torre had raised his hand.
Yes, thank you. So I support the motion, but I wanted to make a slight tweak based on your comments, Chair. But before I do that, I also wanted to say CVRP was new car purchases. It started in 2010. It ended 22, 23, whatever. $1.2 billion to incentivize EV purchases in the state of California. Roughly half a million cars, which stood up the EV market in California. Now, as many, a few people mentioned, we're over 26, 27% of new car sales being EVs. It worked. Then we shut it down. This is for used EVs, for low-income, impacted communities, and we should have the same commitment to these communities. And, Chair, you said this. We need to have the same commitment year after year that we had for that here. And so in that vein, I want to offer an amendment, a slight amendment, to the third paragraph down on page 5 of the resolution, where we delegate authority to the executive officer. I read earlier what some of those components here about drafting, negotiating, amending, making updates and modifications in the approved FY24-25 funding plan consistent with board direction, et cetera, and that wherever the right place is for the funding plan, I don't know if it's up in the first part of that paragraph or down and below, that there be a review of funds allocation for Clean Cars for All and DCAP, and that that allocation must be approved by the chair.
Can you repeat that one more time?
That there be a review of the funding allocation for Clean Cars for All and DCAP, and that that allocation must be approved by you, Chair.
Okay. I think that's fine. I think I will slightly amend that. I don't want to add language, but I just want to state two values that I will be considering as part of that review, which is that we are not putting any funds at risk, and that we are not jeopardizing the implementation of DCAP, and that we are balancing or recognizing the balance that we are trying to achieve with the district programs, with our sort of limited, very, very limited, very limited funds. Okay. We have a motion and a second. Clerk,
Madam
would
Chair,
you please
can talk? Can I have a question on your value statement there on that point? Because I would have preferred to have a solid number, and I get that trying to do a number on the fly here could be problematic. So how in your process moving forward to get to that number, because every district has a different fluctuation, what will be the mechanism to say, you know, we get a lot of popularity in March in one district and it moves faster, but you've already approved the allocation? I mean, I guess that's my worry about not trying to set a number where the districts can plan appropriately.
Well, so this is the point I was making at the beginning, right? Which is that you have programs that need to move forward. You have administrators that have funds and they need to implement those programs. So you cannot preserve optionality forever.
Okay.
And so what I would like to do is work with staff to see what, if any, optionality we have, and see if there are solutions that might assist in trying to balance all these things. But I, you know, cannot guarantee an amount at this point. What I can commit to is working closely with staff and reporting back to the board. And as I mentioned, you know, if there's a need to bring this item back, that is always an option.
Very good. Well, thank you. I appreciate that. And I won't belabor the point, but this is one of those where no good deed goes unpunished. You know, I think I feel for the district staff here locally who have tried not to create any false expectations and push the limits to make sure that we get every maximum amount applying. I know that with resources and staff, we could have, you know, gotten even more. I appreciate you. I trust your judgment and your ability to understand these balances, and I'll support the motion and second the motion if it has not been seconded.
I think we do have a motion by Dr. Baum, second by De La Torre, with the modifications. Clerk, would you please call the roll?
Dr. Balms?
Yes.
Mr. De La Torre?
Yes.
Senator Flores? Mr. Guerra?
Guerra, aye.
Ms. Hurt?
Aye.
Mr. Krakow?
Yes.
Dr. Pacheco Werner?
Yes.
Mr. Rechtschaffen?
Yes.
Dr. Shaheen?
Aye.
Ms. Takborian?
Yes.
Chair Randolph?
Yes.
The motion passes.
Okay, we are now moving on to open public comment. We will provide the opportunity for those who wish to provide a comment regarding an item of interest within the jurisdiction of the board that is not on the agenda. The clerk will call on those who have submitted a request to speak card, and if you are joining us remotely and wish to comment, please click the raised hand button or dial *9 now. Clerk, would you please call commenters?
We currently have no open commenters.
Okay. Before we take a break for our closed session, I just wanted to take a moment to acknowledge Annette Hebert, who is retiring from the California Air Resources Board, and we are all just deeply, deeply appreciative of her amazing service to the people of the state of California. The work she has done on our enforcement cases, including the most famous one, the Volkswagen cases, and many, many, many other enforcement actions. The work she has done to ensure strong regulatory frameworks, the work she has done to ensure a strong certification system, the work she did to build and implement the most amazing Southern California headquarters, the incredible capacity of that lab to do incredible work, her leadership in building community partnerships as part of that process, her unfailing sense of humor and calmness in the most crazy situations. And I just can't express my thanks enough for what you have provided to the state of California. So thank you. We are all going to miss you so, so much. The board will now break for closed session as authorized by Government Code Sections 11126A1 and 11126E to conduct our second annual Executive Officer Performance Review and discuss with counsel pending litigation. We will adjourn the meeting after the closed session. Thank you, everyone. All right, the board has emerged from closed session. No action was taken. This meeting of the California Air Resources Board is now adjourned.